congratulations to Israel Castaneda from Santa Ana. I'm positive I said that well.
Mm-hmm. I bet that was close. I bet you were pretty close on that one.
Two tickets to the K-Rock Absolute Almost Acoustic Christmas for night two.
Congratulations. Well done. You can win them every hour at the top of the hour all day long here on K-Rock. Look who's on the phone, you guys.
Hey.
Comedian, radio, podcast host, writer, director, producer, all-around good guy, Adam Carolla, back on the Kevin and Bean. How are you, Eastman?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. I hear you guys are in my old studio.
Oh, is this where your studio was? Really? Here in the Wilshire building?
Yeah, that's the same studio I was in when I was on KLSX.
That explains a lot of what's on the floor. A lot of the stains are making sense now.
People don't remember this now because a number of years have gone by, but when the great Howard Stern left terrestrial radio, there was a three-pronged attack to replace him.
That's right.
And Adam Carolla was the strongest leg of those three prongs.
Oh, really? Not David Lee Roth?
And lasted the longest, if I recall. And that's where we are, here in the now Entercom mothership. How about that?
Oh, I wish you 39 months of success.
All right. Adam, I'm glad you called. Obviously, you've got the live podcast taping coming up on Friday, November 30th at 8 o'clock at the Grove of Anaheim with special guest Rob Riggle. That is going to be a great time. Tickets available through adamcarolla.com for just $35 for the Ace Man and Rob Riggle. But I wanted to ask you if you would share something that you shared on your podcast the other day that I think is very important. It's overlooked with young people today who don't take their handshakes seriously. Seriously, you have given this a lot of thought about all the different handshakes you encounter out on the street, and you got some definite rules, right?
I do. There's only one handshake. It's grab the guy's hand and go up and down. There's the power. Well, what I'm saying is like you've all met the sales guys who do the power move where they turn your hand 90 degrees and go right to left instead of up and down.
Sometimes put their other hand on top of the two, yeah.
There's a guy who does the hand dry on the thigh before he gets your hand who should offer you a fist bump because he's got a problem, or we should invent sweaty hand slacks that have a nice, dry, velvety right hand patch on top of the thigh so you can dry it, a squeegee on top of the thigh so they can not give you the sloppy St. Bernard hand. I don't like that.
I told you you put a lot of thought into this.
I don't like the limp. I don't like the limp hand. I don't like the when we're done, we're going to go over to my dad's house and I'm going to come out handshake. I don't like the opposite of that handshake, which is I'm going to impose my will on you handshake.
Sure.
I don't like the handshake that never ends where the guy goes, you remember me? You remember me? You remember when we met? You know, I don't know. He won't let go of your hand and it's going to go on forever.
I was going to ask you about that. What's the appropriate amount of shakes in a handshake, Adam?
Well, it's weird, but I think it's like the old Supreme Court said about pornography. We'll know it when we see it.
Okay?
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'll know it. If both of you are doing your job, it'll be like the line at the ATM. I don't need to get out a measuring tape and say, sir, you need to stand 9'6" behind me. If you're both good human beings and you're both dialed in, you'll know the distance to stand behind somebody at an ATM, right?
Fair enough.
Yeah, you'll figure it out.
Agreed,
yeah,
sure.
Absolutely.
And you'll both know through the social dance of life how long to keep onto that hand. Oh, and also, I don't like the, I've just sold you a used RV. I'm going to go over the top with my left hand and do a two-handed handshake. I don't like that move either.
All right, how do you feel about, and I hate nothing, this isn't about politics at all, but it's just the president's personal style. How do you feel about the handshake that he grabs onto your hand and physically pulls you toward him while he's shaking your hand?
That is a weird power move unless it becomes the coolest thing in the world where he whispers something to you and then you both have a laugh with a knowing nod.
He's right. He's right. Yeah, he's right. Because that could be funny. Yeah.
Yeah, the only thing better than that is when, like, Pearl Jam is playing and Eddie Vedder walks over to the lead guitar player and they exchange something, and they both walk away shaking their head laughing. That's the coolest thing. You'll never know what they're said. I don't think they ever even say anything. I think they just go, mugga, mugga, mugga. Oh, man. Oh, that's awesome.
This is what amazes me about the way Corolla's brain works. What was that movie, Kevin? Was it the Bradley Cooper movie where he had a pill where he could use 90% of his brain and all of a sudden,
yeah,
like, everything over? That's what Corolla's like, because he goes through the world and situations that we just accept as existing in the world, he has to dissect them and spend energy on understanding them and trying to make them better. It must be very weird and very exhausting to look at the world through your eyes, Adam.
Well, you know, it's a calorie burner bean, but not as many calories burnt as my old job up on a roof scraping asphalt shingles off an apartment in Van Nuys. So I'll take it. And by the way, that movie's like 8 years old, and they made that movie today about the pill that Bradley Cooper took to make him a genius.
It was called Limitless.
Yes. They'd have to make it a chewable. It'd have to be in the form of a dinosaur, and it'd have to be a gummy, chewable, multiple pill, because dudes can't even take pills anymore. Although, a man's ability, I never judged a man's ability to swallow. That's not right.
Okay, and on that note, ladies and gentlemen, AdamCarolla.com is where you want to go for all the podcast and live concert information, including Friday, November 30th. Hey, that's next Friday, by the way. That's a week from this coming Friday at 8 p.m. at the Grove of Anaheim with special guest Rob Riggle, who is always very, very funny. Get your tickets at AXS.com or AdamCarolla.com, starting at just $35. Ace, have a great Thanksgiving. I know you'll be making your cranberry sauce from scratch. Enjoy it. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Kevin.
All right, he gave away tickets to Nine Inch Nails this morning. Still coming up. You can join Kevin this Friday night at the LA Galaxy game in his section. We got tickets for that. We'll have later this hour tickets for the new Johnny Knoxville movie and comedy with Chris D'Elia, plus Disneyland tickets. We're bribing people at this point.
I mean, we've been bribing them for a long time. Let's be honest.
You can win all of that between now and 10 a.m. here on K-Rock.
Got a lot of tweets from people, a lot of people demanding that we do this story. At what age did you move out of the house, Bean?
That's a great question. I think I was around 19, maybe.
Allie?
College, so 17.
Same.
Yeah.
This guy's 30. This guy's 30 and he won't move out.
Before you mock, the economy goes up, the economy goes down. I know it's great right now, but I guarantee as expensive as housing is in Southern California, we have listeners with jobs who would love to move out of their parents' house.
Right.
And they're 20, 25, maybe even 30.
I agree.
But they can't do it.
But the thing is that their parents aren't begging them and sending them letters and taking them to court to get them to move out. I assume most people who are 30 and living at home have to and are being good about it and try to help out where they can. This guy's just a dick.
I agree.
His parents hate him.
I agree.
So they had to take him to court.
30-year-old Michael Rotundo is being evicted from his mom and dad's house. But he won't leave, so he's being taken to court by mom and dad.
I mean, that's a level of crazy you don't see often.
It's insane.
Anytime your parents are suing you, things have gone off the rails.
Something went wrong.
Yeah.
He claims legally he wasn't given enough notice to leave, but he's facing an uphill battle in the court of public opinion.
Oh, this is where they start interviewing people on the street that have no idea about this story and asking them questions.
He needs to get out.
Give his mother and father space, actually, because it's that time. He's 30. And then you're not paying rent or you're not, like, being independent. You got to be independent.
Court filings allege Rotundo doesn't contribute to the family's expenses and doesn't help out with chores around the house.
That doesn't make no sense if you're going to stay in your mother's house 30 years old and don't help do nothing. Grow up.
His parents have given him 5 written notices over the past few months telling him he needs to leave.
Now,
yes, absolutely.
Now
after
your
the
parents,
first one, after
right.
the first letter,
right.
you give them 48 hours or a week or whatever it is, and then you change the locks.
But if you're the kid and you get a legal notice from your parents trying to ask you to leave, don't you leave?
Yeah.
Even if you're a dick, don't you leave?
Yes.
This is insanity.
You
they do. They give him 5 different letters, one of them offering him $1,100 to help him relocate.
Oh, jeez.
And he said, what? No thanks, I got a place.
And they cook for me and they clean for me and it's great. Why do you guys suppose, he clearly does not get along at all with his parents. Why do you suppose he wants to live under the same roof as them?
He's lazy and doesn't want to spend money on his own place.
Yeah, and I assume they don't have dinner together. Mm-hmm. I assume he stays in his room.
Yeah, they said he contributes nothing to the household. No chores, no nothing. So
he just wants to save money.
Yeah. Okay.
They even claim they've offered to help him get started on his own. Rotundo is calling his parents' effort retaliatory.
I feel bad for both of them because he's not learning anything by staying at home, and he's just wasting their time and money.
Neighbors say they're sad to see such a great family go through this, but admit every parent has a limit.
I'm just going to suggest that this is not a family that you're sad to see go through this, honestly.
Really?
I mean, they
obviously brought it all on themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
And they got the dillweed son in their house.
Yes, a dillweed son.
No one loves him. That family's a nightmare.
But I would expect them to be gone by 30.
The Rotundos are scheduled to hash it out again in court later this month, about 7 weeks before their son's 31st birthday. Reporting in Camillus, I'm Justin Page.
All right, so that was about 7 weeks ago because now they've gone to court.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the update.
Tonight, a bizarre case of parents versus son. Mark and Christina Rotundo telling a judge through an attorney.
Seriously, dude.
I mean, come on. Here's the other thing. You threaten to sue. You threaten to go to court. But most people, I think, end up settling in some way to short of court.
Right.
Yes. Absolutely. That would be, for most people, that would be enough to realize your parents are serious about this, and it's really, really, really time to go before it gets ugly.
They're in court!
Yeah.
They're not
literally
this guy.
Sitting in front of
a judge. Yep.
That their 30-year-old son must move out of their home.
They have no obligation to provide support. He's well over the age of 21.
In a lawsuit, they say they have sent him 5 letters in the past 2 months, like this one. You must leave this house immediately, telling him you have to work, even giving him more than $1,000 to find a new place.
There is no reason for these people to have him in their home.
Michael says he's planning to leave in a few months.
Oh, yeah, I'll leave, but I'll leave when I'm ready.
Right.
In a few months, not now, like when you guys want. Now the court.
I'm not a burden to them in the home. They don't provide laundry or food.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
That's the kid. I mean, I would like to suggest if they've sent you 5 letters asking you to leave and they're taking you to court and you're in court, you are a burden to them.
Right. And you're... I can understand why they're not fluffing and folding for you, kid. Are you kidding me with him?
I'm not a burden to them in the home. They don't provide laundry or food. It's really a moot point for them to seek me to be ejected.
The judge, in the end, siding with the parents.
All right, now I'm going to play a little bit of audio that you're not going to be able to understand at all because it's the judge and it's from a great distance, maybe even out in the hallway. You can't tell where they're recording it from. But then afterwards, they guess what he said. Sounded like he said you need to vacate today.
Well, the man was clearly missing some cues. So at least I think so. At least he's now hearing from somebody that he has to listen to.
It sounded kind of like that too, but that's just so ridiculous.
And David, tonight Michael says he has his own web business and plans to appeal, but it did not go unnoticed that when he left the courthouse today...
When he left the courthouse today?
Oh, if he left with his parents, I swear to God, I'm going to burn this house down.
All right, he didn't leave with his parents necessarily, but where did he go?
He went home.
Back home.
He went right back to his parents' house.
David, see how long that lasts you. Thank you.
Oh, my gosh.
Allie, he's single.
I hate him. I hate his parents that put up with that crap. I need a crying room. That's what I need.
It is a time to make some money going into the holiday weekend, ladies and gentlemen. From Las Vegas, our friend RJ Bell is on the line. Hit it, Steve.
Cause he's RJ Bell. RJ Bell.
Is not only the founder of Pregame.com, the exclusive odds provider for the Associated Press, he does the first national sports betting show on Fox Sports Radio weekdays from 3 till 4. RJ, welcome back, sir. How are you?
I got to be honest, I'm a little shook.
A little shook?
Yeah, why? I've got, you know, alligator blood, as they said, in Rounders, but
right before the segment, you guys said we almost lost the RJ Bell song.
I mean, yeah.
And I would have, like, not had, I would have canceled Thanksgiving for myself.
RJ, we'd call the Smithsonian and get their copy. Don't worry about it.
I heard a rumor. It's in a bunker. Is that true?
Yes, under the Smithsonian, we built a bunker. It actually, just coincidentally, they built the Smithsonian there. It has nothing to do with the quality of it.
RJ, I want to know two things before we look at this week's picks. First of all, congratulations on another winning week last week in the Kevin and Bean Show, 2-1 week. Was the Chiefs-Rams Monday night game, in the long history of you watching football games, the greatest NFL game you've ever seen?
Boy, there's such a dichotomy here. Two camps. One camp, and I think it's more people, love it. It's like a video game. Action, 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 right?
Right.
The other camp is, this ain't football. Right? Football's got defense.
Uh-huh.
And I'll be honest with you, I'm probably 50-50. I love to see an exceptional unit on the field. The offense is that unit, exceptional for Kansas City, exceptional for the Rams. But I do believe that defense should matter some. So we do our power rankings, right? We rank the teams 1 to 32. The top six teams in the Vegas power rankings have the top six offenses. So if that's all that matters, it is a fundamentally different game.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I love that. But again, we can always overreact to one season or two seasons. We'll see what happens.
Okay. And it must have been, you must have been on pins and needles knowing that you had the Chiefs plus 3.5 when you're watching a game where the lead changes six times. And, of course, you ended up being right with it.
Ooh, I tell you this. I actually, before the game, my mom was in town. She comes in for Thanksgiving with the rest of the family. She came a little early. I took her to see A Star Is Born, which I thought was excellent, by the way. And
it's great.
Then after the movie, we were watching the game, and she's like kind of getting ready for dinner and all that. And I'm like, we can't leave. So I was actually at the casino watching. It was thrilling. But I tell you, getting that 3.5 made it less stressful.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's take a look at this week's picks from Las Vegas. The big dog game, you got Oakland traveling to Baltimore. Is this the biggest spread we've seen this year, RJ?
No, we're looking at in the 11 range here, and there's been games. Actually, if you might remember, Minnesota was favored by 17 against the Bills, and the Bills won the game.
Wow!
Right, and Kansas City was favored by about 17 against Arizona. But listen, double digits here, and here's why I like the Raiders, the big dog. Last week, Baltimore started rookie quarterback Lamar Jackson. He won the Heisman. Very talented athlete, not a conventional quarterback in the NFL. They ran 27 times the quarterback. Think about that. It's the most in NFL history. He ran 27 times, passed 19.
Wow, that is odd.
Yeah, and it was a big surprise, and Cincinnati got beat by Baltimore. Now the Raiders know it's coming, and you got to wonder, Baltimore's such a big favorite. Do they risk running him so much? Because every time the quarterback runs, he could get injured, and a real chance of that. So I think conservative game plan by Baltimore means us getting 11 points is even more valuable. Big dog of the week, Raiders plus 11.
Very interesting. All right, the aforementioned Buffalo Bills are hosting Jacksonville this weekend. This is your best bet.
Yeah, we're going with the Bills. Some might say the two worst teams in the NFL, Raiders and Bills, but hey, we're contrarian. Best bet, getting 3.5. Couple reasons. One, Jacksonville, you may remember, made the AFC title game last year, almost beat the Patriots. This year, they are out of the playoffs. Last week, they lost to the Steelers. It was a heartbreaking game, a comeback by the Steelers. And literally, we call this the dream crusher. What does that mean? It means whatever your dream was entering the season, it got crushed by that one loss.
Oh, RJ, that's also what I called my dad.
Well, I hear you. But that was every day, yeah. Right? This was one big crushing blow. Mm-hmm. And what ends up happening is that the next game is just hard to get motivated for because your dream has been crushed. Also, here's a trend to finish up. If you have a team that's lost 5 straight games or more, and Jacksonville has, and they're still favored, okay, which they are in this game.
Right.
It's happened 100-plus times in the last 30 years. The favorite team that's been losing a bunch only covers 43%. So it's one of those things, oh, there's some reason they should still be favored, but no, 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 they really shouldn't be. We're going to take the underdog Bills plus 3.5.
I don't pretend to be better than you at this at all, but I just want to remind you that you took the Raiders and the Bills so far.
Exactly, and that's the thing. Okay. Guys like you are giving me value.
All right, last pick is your big game, RJ, and, you know, we do this segment every week, year after year. You rarely bring us a Patriots game. Why are you so interested in this game against the Jets? Because this seems like an easy win for New England.
Maybe this is just a holiday cheer, but I got a new name for this pick.
Okay.
It's the best time to be bad.
It's the best time to be bad.
And here's what it means. Being bad is laying road favorites. Right? We're always saying don't lay points on the road. Well, this is a rare time. Patriots are favored by 9 points on the road. And if you want to be bad, this is the best time to be bad. Let's lay it with the Pats here. And here's why. When Belichick loses, and he just had the biggest loss, 24 points, against the Titans of his career with Brady, it's never been a bigger loss.
Right.
And now he had a bye. So when you have a road favorite, you're always worried, are they focused? Well, Belichick off the worst loss of his career with Brady, and then 14 days to stew about it, I can promise you the Patriots are going to be ruthless in this game. And the Jets, they've got an injured rookie quarterback, Sam Darnold, or a McCown, the backup, who played one of the worst games of the year when he backed up last game for Darnold. So you got a horrible quarterback either way with the Jets. I mean, Darnold may become a good quarterback. He's not right now. And you've got a Belichick and the Patriots team that's out for blood. It's the best time to be bad. Pats minus 9.
This could be the game of the weekend where a team scores 50, right? It's going to be that kind of game.
I think so, because I think he will want to run it up to make a statement.
All right. Oakland plus 11. You heard him right. At Baltimore. Buffalo plus 3.5 hosting Jacksonville. New England minus 9. New York Jets. You can find these and all the other games at pregame.com on Twitter, RJ in Vegas. The RJ Bell Dream Preview podcast has college and football games, and as we mentioned, the National Betting Show is straight out of Vegas with RJ Bell weekdays 3 to 4 on Fox Sports Radio. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving with the family, RJ. We've enjoyed it so far this season. We'll look forward to coming back and doing it again next week, my friend.
Absolutely, same to you guys. Thank you.
Allie, the Dream Interpreter, coming up 1 hour from right now here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Comedian Nikki Glaser is going to be joining us as well. First, though, it is Big Book Club Tuesday, as you told your friend yesterday, Allie. although the only author we really like is Brad Meltzer, and he is back on the phone here on K-Rock. Hey, Brad, how are you, man?
This is like the home. You know, you understand that today they were like, I'm not doing a tour. I'm not doing anything. I said, I'm just literally calling. The only place I love is three places, and you know this is coming home to me.
Well, thank you, Brad. I appreciate that. And before we get into the new book and catch up with all things Meltzer, I wanted to say a lot of action on your Twitter page yesterday. You were deeply affected by the loss of Stan Lee, who seems to be one of those guys that kind of represents the best of all of us that you're always talking to us about.
Yeah, no. I mean, listen, I knew the guy, and he affected my life. He gave me my belief system, like cornerstones of my creed and principles that I follow and live by. And it wasn't about, wearing long underwear or punching Doc Ock in the face. It was that his creations taught me that you should be good. Remember when that was enough just to be good for being good? And like, I think as a country, we're better at fighting. We know how to fight better than ever. But when you fight for yourself and you fight for power or money, you've already lost. And I love that I can still use that lesson that Stan Lee gave me when I was 10 to put good and use my creativity to put good into the world. And that's what I aspire to this very day.
And there were a lot of people yesterday who were pointing out that he was ahead of the curve in many cases on social justice issues. He had very powerful comics about, anti-racism, when not everybody was on board with that. And you're right. He really was a beacon for a lot of people, for a lot of goodness.
Oh, man. I mean, let me read you, because it's just worth doing. This is one of his soapboxes that he wrote in like the 60s. And he said, racism, and this is in the back of the comic book. He said, bigotry and racism are among the deadliest social ills plaguing the world today. And then he talks about how, like, You know, if your hang-up is a black man, you hate all black men. And then listen to this one. Think of it where we are today. If some foreigner beat him to a job, he's down on all foreigners. He hates power he's never seen, people he's never known with equal intensity and equal venom. And then he says, sooner or later, if you're ever to reach, if man's ever to be worthy of his destiny, you must fill your heart with tolerance. And only then will we be the man that was created in the image of God, a God who calls all of us his children.
Wow. Like,
that is Stan Lee. That's in the back of a friggin' Fantastic Four comic book. Well, you know, and I love the fact that he was like, you know, that's why you got Black Panther. That's why you got the X-Men. They weren't just there to punch people in the face, but they were there to show you that there are people who are different than you. And that's a beautiful thing, not something to be hated.
That is so beautifully put. I'm glad you shared that with us, Brad. Is Stan Lee the type of person who could be a candidate for one of your future I Am books?
Of course. Listen, you better believe it. I mean, everyone on Twitter yesterday was like, you doing I Am Stan Lee? I'm like, are you kidding me? Of course I want to do him. The guy, you know, gave us not just Spider-Man. You know, and let me just talk about him. My favorite Spider-Man scene ever is this moment. I think it's number 33. And Spider-Man's trapped under a building. And he can't get out. And Aunt May's about to die. But the whole building is on top of him. And he's like screaming for help. And he's like, I'm not strong enough to get out of this. And he realizes no one's coming to help him. And panel after panel, he's just like, no one's coming. And he finally is like, I have to get out myself. And he just, for panel after panel, pushes his way and says, you have to save yourself. You have to do it when it's hard. And I read it with my young son last night. And I hope he got that message that this isn't a message about Spider-Man. This is a message for all of us about life, is that when you need help, when we're in that hole, because we're all in a hole at some point in time, you gotta find the hero in yourself. That's where the hero is. And
I want Brad to start reading to me at night, you guys.
I want Brad in my pocket forever. Just, I want to keep him safe.
we mentioned the I Am series, the series of best-selling biographies about heroes that you've been doing. You're up to number 16 now, and today is a very big day for you because you have said that the number one question you get asked all the time is, when are you going to do a Latina, Hispanic character? And the book is out today. Tell us about it. Who'd you choose?
Yeah, so we looked long and hard. My sister-in-law is Latina. She's basically what they call in Miami. She's part Jewish, part Cuban. They call them Jubans here. And and she, I'm not even joking, right? So it's great. But she helped me pick it out. We're doing I Am Sonia Sotomayor, the Supreme Court Justice, the first Hispanic Supreme Court Justice. And what I love about her story, as in all these stories, is she's, you know, is the human side, right? Well, none of us are getting to the Supreme Court. Maybe Kevin is, but like,
right.
I mean, as a defendant, right. We'll get there. That's how we'll get there. But the reality is, you know, when she's younger, she's like this crazy girl that runs around. They used to call her when she was little, the Aji, which means hot pepper. So she couldn't sit still, or, you know, you put a bow in her hair and it would just go flying. She got her head stuck in a bucket when she was trying to hear what her voice sounded like inside. That's like the definition of insanely cool to me. Like, you know, and she's just like, you put your head in a bucket and you get stuck. And what happens is she dreams. She used to read Nancy Drew and wanted to grow up to be Nancy Drew and be a detective and a police officer. And what she eventually gets diagnosed with is diabetes when she's 9 years old. Wow. And when she's reading about her diabetes, it tells her that you can't be a police officer. There'll never be one because diabetes won't let you be. And obviously not true anymore, but when she's younger, that's what they tell her. And she's watching Perry Mason, and she's like, I need a new dream. I can't be Nancy Drew. But she sees on Perry Mason that no matter what Perry Mason wants to do in the courtroom, the judge has to weigh in first. You don't do anything without the judge weighing in.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets a chance. She goes to a mom saves money. She's from poor area in the Bronx, saves money, and gets her to a private school. And then she makes her way to Princeton. And this is the best part, is she actually at Princeton succeeds so hard, so well, that she becomes Phi Beta Kappa. And she almost throws the invitation away because she thinks it's a fake jewelry scam, Phi Beta Kappa. Which is like the best, right? And at the end of the day, the reason I love Sonia Sotomayor and the reason the story resonates is, again, I'm not going to be a Supreme Court justice, but it's my story. And I don't know if I've ever told you this, but my family, when I was 13 years old, lost everything. They had, my dad lost his job, and he had $1,200 to his name, and it was, you know, had no place to live, no job. And it wasn't a moment where you're scared about money. We were frightened about safety. Right. We were worried.
Right.
And we moved down to Florida. My parents gave a fake address so I could go to the local wealthy public school that I never should have gone to. And it was there I saw this opportunity, college, to escape, to get out. And that was her story. She got to Princeton and looked around and was like, oh, my gosh, the world is so much bigger than I thought. You know, but to me, we all need that lesson that when you get to wherever you're going to, the first thing she always says is you thank those who come before you. And all of us have had someone who gave us our first real job, someone who told us we were good at something for the first time. Like, think of that person right now when you're done listening here. And listen, I hope you buy the book. God bless. But when you're done with it, go thank that person who took the first chance on you. It will pay you back forever. That's the lesson of I Am Sonia Sotomayor.
How do you, as her in her childhood, it seems like she was very poor. How do you get your head around the fact that someday I might be a Supreme Court justice? Or did she not at that point?
Yeah, no, she doesn't at all. She doesn't even think, when they tell her to go to college, one of the coaches says to her, you should apply to Harvard, you should apply to Princeton. And she thinks she's going to like a local school. And she's like, I can't go there. My parents never even went to college. Her parents didn't even speak English.
Wow.
English is her second language. But this coach says, try. And her grandmother used to tell her, used to read her this poem that said, if you want to get what you want, you must dream it. And so what are you doing? She's like, I'm going to go apply to Princeton.
Wow.
Sure.
And she becomes the valedictorian. She wins all these awards. She wins the highest honor at Princeton. But again, it's just because someone says you can do it. And again, you pay that forward forever.
We are talking to our friend Brad Meltzer on the phone, number one New York Times bestselling author. His latest book is out today called I Am Sonia Sotomayor. And by the way, our listeners always hit up Brad on social media and say, I bought every one of these books and my kids love them. We recommend every one in the series. Final question for me, Brad. You've written so many of these books about people who are no longer with us, your Lincolns and your Einsteins and your Neil Armstrongs. You're writing about someone who's alive and accessible probably to you. Have you met with the justice?
It's funny. The three that we're doing that are alive, we did I Am Jane Goodall, and she helped us with the book. The next one that's coming in February is I Am Billie Jean King, and I spent hours on the phone with her. She's so amazing. The justice actually can't endorse any product. So we sent it to her office. It went to the Supreme Court. We heard back really, we were thrilled with what they said, but she can't weigh in. She's not allowed. But what I love is someone already sent me a picture where they took the book. The book is out today, and they gave it to the justice. And I just love that she's alive and seen this. And there's little girls and little boys around the country going like, this is you, and here you go. And so I just love that she has to deal with all of our nonsense now.
Brad, can I just take a second and just thank you for doing books on a Rosa Parks, on a Justice Sotomayor, people that maybe aren't looked at for these books and that little kids can see themselves in, that don't have a lot of representation. I think that is such a beautiful, wonderful thing for you to do.
No, and listen, that was my niece and nephew. I was like, that's what they need. And the lesson of the book, and I'll leave you with this. This is the lesson in the back. It says, whether it's in English, Spanish, or any other language, our dreams are often the same. A loving family, kind friends, a safe place to call home, and the chance to reach our potential. So no matter where you're born, there's no limit to what you can accomplish. And my God, look where the world is today. Look how much we hate anything that's different from us. And the idea that we're taking these books and the whole I Am series, and we're arming this little army of little kids out there with messages of tolerance. That's what Stanley gave me when I was 10. That's what Jim Henson gave me when I was 5 on Sesame Street, or Mr. Rogers gave me on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, is to use your creativity and put good into this world. And that's all I hope that this book is doing, is this series is doing, is trying to do just that.
Brad, I got to tell you, you're a voice of positivity is needed more now than ever in history.
Amen.
And it's amazing.
For sure. And I'd like to say best book club Tuesday ever, you guys. get Brad's new book, I Am Sonia Sotomayor, available wherever books are sold. Brad, if we don't talk to you before the holidays, have a wonderful one, and we'll catch up with you in 2019. Thank you, my friend.
You know that. Love you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Highlights of Kanye West with Charlamagne tha God coming up on The Kevin and Bean Show. It's an hour 45.
Oof. That's a lot of Kanye.
He sometimes thinks too long before answering.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
It's a slow conversation that you've sped up for us.
That was very fast what I just did.
You're saving us a lot of time.
Correct.
With the recap coming up.
I'm saving you about a half hour.
Also, we're going to talk to the genius behind the 0.5K race that's going on in Texas this weekend. Great idea. We need to start that here, too, by the way.
Agreed.
That's all on the way. First, though, hey, what's up with Florida?
You goddamn people of Florida! You bunch of bastards!
Florida, Florida, Florida.
What's up with Florida?
You always have the craziest news. What's up with you?
Florida, Florida, Florida.
What's up with Florida?
Let's all find out what happened now in Florida.
Please stop me if you've heard any of these stories before. I've been gone for a while, so if you covered it, just let me know and I'll move on.
If we covered it, that means we loved it and tell it again.
There's so much Florida going on. Kevin, I'm particularly interested to get your take on this story. This is a Florida father who is demanding answers after he found what he thought was an inappropriate question in his daughter's homework assignment for her anatomy class. His daughter is in the 11th grade at Westside High School in Jacksonville. The father was appalled by the question. It was about a baby's blood type. It used the word baby daddy and dealt with a woman who slept with her ex-boyfriend and his best friend. Here's the question, in part. Ursula was devastated when her boyfriend broke up with her after having sex. To get revenge, she had sex with his best friend the next day. But the question was about a blood type and continued, if her baby daddy is her ex-boyfriend, what could her baby's possible blood type not be? I see what they were going for.
Sure.
But the dad
it seems
was,
ill-advised.
The dad was like, you know, maybe that's for soap operas or reality TV. I mean, it's not really the type of thing I want to put out there in front of my daughter who's in 11th grade.
You could ask the exact same question in a different way.
About her husband.
Right.
And then what? Yeah. Easy.
Yeah. So you
well,
guys,
that was a miscalculation.
You guys agree it was an inappropriate
sure.
question.
Yeah.
And the school district did, too. They did issue a policy saying it was not part of the lesson plan. And they're thankful to the parent who contacted the school with his concerns. So they're changing that. Yeah, I would be very surprised by seeing that on my 11th grader as well. Here's another one in high school. This is a teenager in Sarasota. You might have seen this. It made the national news. His promposal. Did you guys talk about his promposal that went viral?
Was it with his dad?
No.
Okay.
This is an 18-year-old senior at Riverview High School named Noah Crowley, and he put up a sign that said...
Sorry, what is Kevin's promposal that he asked his dad?
His dad? No. It was a different story. Go ahead, Pete. Go ahead.
He held up a sign that said, if I was black, I'd be picking cotton, but I'm white, so I'm picking you for prom.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
Now, he's 18, you guys.
Yeah.
Isn't he well old enough to realize how deaf that statement is?
It sounds racist.
It is racist.
He knew how deaf it was, and that's why he did it.
Trying to be edgy? Funny?
Maybe he's just a racist.
It's very possible. It is Florida. He did, once he saw the feedback on his social media, he did post, I want to sincerely apologize if I offended anyone with the picture going around. That was not my intention. It was a complete joke and it went too far. But after reading the text in the Snapchat, I see how I have offended people and I am truly sorry. The family also issued a statement and said that their son will not be attending the prom in any way. So, yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, all just right. Ask your dad, like Kevin's story.
No. My story is the guy asking the girl and the girl's dad holding up a sign on the beach saying, right. Say no.
Oh, no, that was for a wedding. That was
a
them
wedding.
Getting married.
Oh, man.
That's funny. I'm sorry I missed that.
Love that.
Here is Kevin Raymond Curtis from Augusta, Florida. He is in the news. He was returning home after a 20-hour shift the other night, and he got into a very serious car accident. In fact, the airbag went off, and he got a chunk of airbag in his mouth that caused it to be difficult for him to breathe. Now, try to follow all this. The police show up, and they believe, because of the way he's acting, that he might be high on something.
Okay.
In reality, he's lightheaded and having trouble breathing as a result of the accident and the airbag. The police officer asks him to pull out his driver's license and his registration out of the glove compartment. As he does that, he passes out.
Oh.
The police officers are putting two and two together. They see the way this guy is acting, and then they also see in the glove compartment a bag full of a white sandy material. And they think, this guy's overdosing right now. So they give him that drug. What is it called? Narcan. They put that Narcan in him to try to bring him back, and it does. Well, it turns out the guy wasn't on any drugs at all. It was a result of the airbag that made him faint because he was having trouble breathing. The police officers didn't know that. And the white sandy material in the baggie in his glove compartment was his father.
Oh, good God.
The cremated remains, the ashes of his late father.
Why am I the only one applauding?
Why was he snorting his dad?
He wasn't snorting his dad. He wasn't. They just assumed
they forced him to.
They assumed it was heroin.
They gave it to him and said, snort this.
It was his dad. Now, you may be asking, as I did, why is Mr. Curtis driving around with his father in the glove compartment of his car? Even, especially since his dad had been dead for 5 years.
What?
It 48 grams, by the way, of dad in the glove compartment. It turns out that he just 2 weeks ago had gotten the ashes from his sister because he was tired of her leaving him in a baggie and was hanging on to him while he was waiting for the urn that he ordered to arrive. No telling why he left it in the glove compartment instead of taking it to the house. But it was all just a big misunderstanding. He wasn't on drugs. He wasn't responsible for the accident. Someone had hit him. But dad was held as evidence and was in jail for 48 hours. Mr. Curtis said, it's the only time my dad's ever been in jail. It took me forever to get him out.
I'm here to claim my dad, please.
What a crazy...
I was my dad's phone call.
what a crazy series of circumstances, though, right?
That's nuts. That story has everything.
It really does.
Hey, a Florida man ended up in jail after his dashboard camera showed police more than he intended. 25-year-old Xavier Moran was involved in a crash on April 5th. He told a sheriff's deputy he had been cut off by another driver, and he could prove it with his dashboard camera. He signed a consent waiver to search the camera.
I'd like. Why do some people tune out?
I don't know how that's appropriate. When the Palm Beach County Sheriff's deputy reviewed the footage, they saw Mr. Moran burglarizing a beauty store. On video, they showed him taking a baseball bat from the trunk and smashing out the glass door of the store, going in and stealing stuff from the store. So this dude voluntarily signed over his dashboard camera.
Yeah, look at it. Look at everything. Go ahead. Review it.
Did he just forget that he was shown on there committing a burglary?
He's very busy.
Apparently so. So that's not exactly what he planned. And one more. Here's a Florida man arrested early Thursday on a drunk driving charge. He was weaving on a Port St. Lucie highway around 3 a.m. The cop pulled the driver over. It turned out that he was not wearing pants, but he was very, very drunk. And okay. He was wearing underwear only. And the underwear had the word breathalyzer on them. And then...
And then an arrow.
Oh. And then a portion near his genitals, it said, blow here.
Oh,
which
God.
Maybe isn't the only thing you should be wearing when you get pulled over
but
for drunk driving.
But you should be wearing it. It shouldn't be the only thing.
What is up with Florida?
Florida, Florida, Florida. What's up with Florida?
Comedian, podcaster, actor, our friend, I will say our close personal friend, ladies and gentlemen, the great Doug Benson joins us back in the studio on the Kevin Nation.
Doug. Hey, what's up?
How are you, man? It's great to see you. Happy holidays.
Oh, it's such a wonderful time of year. I just tweeted this morning, hate to burst your bubble, holiday fans, but summer is the most wonderful time of the year.
You don't have any love for Thanksgiving, Christmas?
Not really, no.
Okay.
I mean, when I was a kid, I loved all that stuff.
Right.
But as an adult with no kids, it's what's the point? And no real religious affiliation, you know?
Do you have Friendsgivings?
I'm going to...
Do you have friends?
I've got shows in New York this weekend, so I'm flying on Thanksgiving.
Oh.
I'm going to be in the air through all of it.
Smart. I don't know if you saw the traffic last night, all the pictures of the traffic last night of people leaving town, driving. Whew.
Well, he still has to get to the airport.
What a nightmare.
That's true. I do have to do that.
Yeah. Doug, you are one of the most personable and approachable people I have ever met.
Asking him out? Or not?
I would be stunned if Doug Benson is not a guy who has hundreds of friends in Southern California. You seem like a very social person.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I'm mostly social in the work, you know. I like hanging out with other comedians at comedy clubs and having them as guests on my shows and stuff, and I do probably the number of friends probably counts in like the hundreds. But I don't, you know, most of them go somewhere for Thanksgiving. and Christmas. But if
so
they,
you don't have people you
they
get together with for the holidays.
Some people will get together, you know.
Are you doing an intervention, Bean?
What's happening? Are you feeling sad for me or something?
Jensen, I demand that you invite Doug to your Thanksgiving.
Well, you're highly welcome to come hang out with my Jewish mom and me.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, she'll just complain to you about how much I call.
Yeah, no, yeah. I get a lot of calls and texts from my Jewish friends, like, you know, if you need somewhere to go on Christmas, we're going to go out for Chinese.
Yeah, we'll all be at Genghis Cohen on Fairfax.
That's how it works, for sure. Now, you do the 12 guests of Christmas every year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to be at the Largo at the Coronet with two big shows on December 2nd and 3rd. Everything is super secret, or you can spill some beans about what to expect if people go.
I just like you work your own name in your sentence.
He does it every interview.
That's talent.
He's always talking about spilling beans. honey, bean spilled again.
Why are you making it sound like a sex euphemism? It's not at all. You're the one that said it.
Yeah, you heard the words. So what was the question?
The question is, what are you allowed to say about the 12 guests? Because that's quite a boast.
You know, I like to keep all of my guests secret on the shows because I just think it's more fun, and disappointment's a bad way to start a show if I don't get the biggest names.
Right.
But
Lady Gaga will
be. I will say this. Yes, Bradley Cooper one night, Lady Gaga the other. No, it's... I'll spill two beans so that to get people to come to both nights, because it looks like night one, Sunday, December 2nd, I believe John Hamm will be there.
Hey. Oh, all right.
And,
he's always hilarious.
And it's looking like night two. He is, though. It's weird.
He's one of the funniest guys in Hollywood.
Oh, you were being serious. Yeah. I thought you were being
John
a dick.
John Hamm is hilarious. Okay.
No, he is. He really is. But, yeah, it does. You don't know which way somebody's going on that when they say it. That Don Draper, what a riot.
Yeah. Oscar Schindler, so funny.
But right, so that's the Sunday night. How about Monday?
Sunday night. And then the one I'll reveal on Monday night is Sarah Silverman. Will be
no. All right. Great.
Yeah, speaking of stellar. Jews.
stellar stars both nights.
Yeah, and then 11 other people just crowding the stage and making you go, wait, I want more of Hamm.
I want more Hamm?
I want more
Hamm.
What people are shouting? That's what people say around the holidays.
All right, so that's the 12 guests of Christmas at the Largo at the Coronet. Two big shows, Sunday the 2nd, Monday the 3rd. Tickets available right now through DougLovesMovies.com. How current are you on the onslaught of fourth quarter movies right now, Doug? You've been going to see a lot of them lately?
I've seen a few, but it's really going to – that's another thing I'm going to spend most of my December doing, is seeing all the Oscar bait and, you know, all that stuff. But, of course, I've already seen Star is Born, and I enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're both stupid talented. Bradley Cooper directed that thing, wrote a bunch of the songs. Like, I didn't even know that guy could sing. Like,
I didn't either before.
Where's
this.
He been hiding that?
I didn't either. Yeah, he's ridiculously talented.
Yeah.
Do you remember a couple
but
of years...
But he's ugly. He's got to live with that face.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He tries to be ugly in the movie with that stringy hair.
Oh, remember? Do you remember when he did Elephant Man?
Yeah, I saw it.
It was just him with, like, a little bit of a snarl. He, like, didn't even do much to his face.
Right, but his body was all twerked. And, yeah. Like, it was an exhausting performance.
Yeah.
But you were saying, Bean?
I was saying, speaking of Bradley Cooper, who is better at everything than everybody, do you remember a couple of years ago when he did an interview on television in fluent French?
Ugh.
And it just
that's annoying.
Just hate him. And then there's that old clip of him where he's a student at the school where they did Inside of the Actor's Studio.
Yes, that's
and
right.
He asked Sean Penn a question.
Yes.
And it's just like, every time you watch that show, you could never possibly think anybody in the audience is going to turn out to be more famous someday
than the person
they're talking to.
We laugh about Bradley Cooper. I know we're going on a deep dive here, but because when he was on Alias and he played like Jennifer Garner's like sniveling boyfriend, we were like, this guy's a loser.
So
this guy's
snivelly.
Not going. Yeah,
turns out just a great actor.
Anywhere, right? Just
playing,
a great actor.
Playing snivelly well.
Who knew?
Yeah.
Have you seen the Harry Potter movie yet?
Mm-mm. No. I don't know if
Are
I
you into the
I
Harry
don't
Potter
know
world?
I will.
You don't know if you will.
I like all the Harry Potter movies, but that first Fantastic Beasts didn't do much for me. Like, first of all, it's like called Where to Find Them. They're in his suitcase the whole time. And then...
spoiler alert.
And they're making them like 2.5 hours long. It's just
too
much. Yeah,
they are getting too long.
I'll just watch it on a plane someday, maybe.
Your movies are like a tight 82 minutes, right? Like The Good Lord Intended.
Oh, I wish movies were that
right?
short.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Like, it really is a great.
If you can't tell your story in an hour and a half, then make a part two 6 months later, right?
Well, that's the thing is it's, you know, they do that silly thing where they make 7 Harry Potter movies and split up the last two just to get one more movie out. But yeah. There's so much material in those books that they should have just been doing parts of the books all along. They could have made 30 movies.
I mean, I don't know that we needed 30 movies, but
they
could have.
That was an exaggeration because I'm on a morning comedy show. But you know what I mean, though? Like, it could have been more. They always just do it at the end. They did it with Hunger Games. You know what I mean? They just suddenly decide to split up that last book. But every book is thick as F.
All right. I have one more question for before we take a break, Doug. And we got a bunch of stuff we want to run by. And that is, you're a big movie fan. The biggest. What? Is there anyone?
What's happening right
anyone
now?
Anyone waiting for 3 or 4 or however many more Avatar movies there are going to be?
You know what, dude? I went to Disney World recently, and that Avatar ride there, you have to sign up for it months in advance.
Really? No.
Yeah, like to get a fast pass, you got to sign up 90 days ahead of time when you're going to be there. Yeah.
Because that's not a movie that I imagine anybody is going, "Hey, I want to see that again. Let's put Avatar back
but
on."
But it sounds like a really fun ride, like that it doesn't matter that
true.
It's that it's Avatar.
I would go see a new Avatar.
Oh, I wouldn't.
You haven't lost your enthusiasm. Well, hasn't it been 10 years since the last one or something?
It hasn't been solid enthusiasm. I have forgotten about it for most of those years.
Number one, it's going to be like 4 hours long.
That's true. That's not good.
I can't even remember a name of a character. It's lucky I even remember Navi, if that's the right way to say it.
Yeah, like, I think it is.
It didn't stick with me at all. I don't remember anything from it.
I'm just saying I'm going.
I just feel like it was a moment in time where James Cameron was showing off some hot new technology.
Yeah.
And we saw it. We went, okay, the demonstration was effective. And then you move on. It's not like it's a movie that anyone cares about. I just can't believe they're making so many of them.
Yeah, of all the characters that are different colors that
right?
Zoe Saldana has played, blue is my least favorite.
All right, fair enough. Put that on the poster, James.
But it was, Avatar. I will say that I've never been as impressed with 3D since. Like, it's the best looking 3D movie.
It was amazing. Yeah, that's true. Most of the 3D movies are not shot
they
in
don't,
3D.
Yeah, and yeah. they just don't.
So they kind of look
who
crappy.
Cares? Like, the film, when you look at it, has depth already.
But I will go and see the 3D anytime there's one in 3D.
Yeah, I've heard that about you, like and I'm the opposite.
You're the opposite.
I skip the 3D every
time. I think most
time.
People are the opposite.
Yeah.
For sure. I don't know.
My
it's
theaters are usually empty.
Well, if you don't like crowds,
that's a good way to do it.
Yeah.
All right. Doug Benson is our guest. Take a quick break. More with Doug right after this on K-Rock. It was kind of a surprise to all of us. You guys, the great Doug Benson in studio with us right now here on the Kevin and Bean Show. We love having comedians on the show. We're so fortunate, Doug, that we are here in Los Angeles doing the show, and so many of you are kind enough to come in. Listen to this. Tuesday, Eliza is going to be here with us. Next Wednesday, Jeff Ross going to be on the show. Next Friday, Bill Burr here on the Kevin and Bean Show. So...
quite a run.
So we're peaking today, is what I'm being saying.
Yeah, it's all downhill next week.
It's interesting, we're going on a bang with Doug. It's interesting. Eliza's a one-namer.
Right.
Didn't need that last name. You can't just go, Jeff and Bill are going to be here.
Right. She's very smart that way.
Those guys are huge, but their first names are not going to penetrate.
Doug, when I am prepping for a guest, I oftentimes will search to see what's new with that guest or see if they've made news in any way. And you have a name that is sort of common. I guess you probably met a lot of Doug Bensons around the world, I would imagine, right?
No.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I don't think I've ever met another Doug Benson, but yes, it is pretty common.
I would imagine so. So here's the story that came up. It's about the controversy over marijuana being legal in Michigan, and the person who is speaking out against it in Michigan
yes.
is named Doug Benson.
Oh no!
Who forbids smoking at the 81 residential units he owns in Lansing? The ban includes vaping and applies to both tobacco and marijuana. Smoking is smoking is smoking, says Benson. And I thought, how hilarious is it that this Doug Benson hates pot?
Yeah, and he also that a Benson hates cigarettes is funny because Benson and Hedges is that still a thing?
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know if they still make that or not.
That was, you know how when you're a kid, the taunting from the other kids is just so so basic
and dumb.
That
yeah.
kids would just be like, they just say Benson and Hedges to me, and I just be like, yes, that's a thing.
A company. That's a brand.
That's the difference between me and you. Is I'm going to figure out how to make that actually funny, yeah. and you're just an idiot.
We mentioned your Doug Loves Movies. You're doing the 12 Guests of Christmas at the Largo at the Coronet December 2nd and 3rd. You're doing a similar show in New York as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do two nights in both cities, which is probably one night too many because I got to book, 21 guests. But the idea is there's 12 guests compete in a big single elimination game of movie trivia. And then when we've narrowed it down to three, those three get to come back the second night in whichever city they're in.
It's a battle to the
death. So John Hamm might be there both nights. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
But yeah, so it's a... you know, so I have to book 21 people, which is, you know, can be interesting.
Sure.
What do you do for New Year's Eve?
This year, New Year's Eve, I'll be in Austin, Texas, doing a couple of shows.
Do you sort of have to work on that night?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a big night for stand-up comedy for some reason. People, I don't know why, because I feel like everybody in the audience is just sitting there thinking about what went right or wrong in the last year, hoping
so they're not
about
paying
next
attention
year.
At all.
You know what I mean? And then they're getting drunk on top of it. So it's not the most optimal stand-up comedy time, but, you know, since that's what people want to do, it's because they charge extra, you know, they'll give people a glass of champagne and a party favor. $50. Thanks for coming.
And do you have a big countdown at midnight?
Yeah, I generally do. If I'm the comic, I'll, just be out there and countdown, but again, once everybody's cheering and stuff, because some comedy clubs are like, and then you'll do another half hour. It's like, what? After everybody cheers and says, yay, it's midnight, let's all go outside and smoke weed.
Yeah, that's you want that to be the end of the show, right?
Yeah, yeah.
At midnight. I suspect that Doug would get the numbers out of order if he counted down at midnight.
Yeah,
after a long day.
You know, what are you going to do?
As long as it ends
nobody
correctly.
Cares. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Get to the zero.
You don't want to end at 10 seconds.
Yeah, right. just get to the zero. We're done.
Bean, tell us your story.
Oh, don't make me
tell
the story.
Yeah, tell the story of Barry Manilow.
No, don't make
because that's this is why the best. Because it's the best story ever.
And there's just not enough Barry Manilow on this station.
Right?
No. Well, first of all, I love Barry. I'm a fan of Lowe, and mm-hmm. I'm not ashamed to say it. In fact, I'm thinking about
that part out.
I'm thinking about going to see him again in the next couple months. He's doing some dates. Barry was playing back at the late, great Universal Amphitheater back in the 90s, and my wife and I went to see him on New Year's Eve. And, I mean, that's a nice night out to see Barry Manilow playing his greatest hits on New Year's Eve, right? You can all agree with me there.
Big show, yeah.
All right. And he does the thing that you would expect him to do as a musical performer, is he sings his great song, It's Just Another New Year's Eve, and then he has the big countdown, and 10, 9, 8, and then the crowd is going wild, and there's party favors, and there's glitter, and there's balloons, and it's all happening, and getting ready to kiss your loved one. And he gets down to the end, he's like, Happy New Year! Sings Auld Lang Syne, walks off the stage.
All right, everybody, that sounds like a great night.
Sounds like a great night. Until everyone in the audience is looking at their watches and going, It's 10 of. It's it's 11:50. Where the hell is Manilow?
He just couldn't make it?
I don't know.
I don't think he was too high. I don't think he does that sort of thing.
I don't know if he just was so tired he had to get off that stage or if he had a private party he wanted to get to backstage. Like, all right, this is for the fans, but now I'm going to go back and have my own
Did
New
he
Year's
think
party.
Nobody would notice?
What is that? Is that from you or is that from me?
I don't know what that's from.
Who's doing that?
It's Barry Manilow.
Yeah, he's calling.
It's furious.
That's a weird noise that I've never heard before, you guys.
Wow. Oh, it just stopped.
What if you heard just a huge explosion?
Oh, my God. So, I don't know. That's just the weirdest thing.
I think a pot pie is ready.
It's just so weird to this day. Like, all these years later, I'm still so deeply concerned and troubled by why that happened.
It's super odd if you walk off stage at 10 till. That's weird.
So
you
are celebrating
with
the countdown.
They did the countdown in front of a crowd of people wearing watches.
Right.
Yes. And, like, they're all looking at it. Wait.
My wife and I are in the parking lot trying to find our car when all the fireworks started going off at Universal when it actually became midnight.
What a magical New Year's Eve.
Yes. What year was this, do you think?
I mean, if I had to guess, it
47?
Was
47?
No, I mean, it was, you know, 96, 97, somewhere in there, I would imagine.
I was going to guess like pre-internet.
No, it was in the 90s. It was definitely in the 90s.
But you know what I mean? Like, that seems, it seems like people in the audience would start screaming, hey, it's way before midnight.
Yeah. Well, I would expect an encore. I would expect everybody applause.
Oh, he comes out and does it again?
Then he comes out. Yeah, well, yeah. I wouldn't have expected the countdown.
For his encore, he did the celebration again.
Anyway, it was weird. So don't do that, Doug, because people will be deeply concerned.
All right. Well, maybe I'll, since I'm going to be in Texas, so maybe I'll do the countdown at California time.
Yeah. Do it at the early show.
Wait until...
Yeah, tell the early show people. You don't want them to miss what you're going to do at the late show, and so just do the countdown at the early show.
That's a great idea, countdown in the early show.
There you go.
That's funny. And then how do you go over in Texas, by the way? I mean, you're not a super political guy, but is Texas good to you?
Texas is super good to me, but everywhere, like people, you know, like they legalized weed in Michigan just recently, and then, you know, get all these messages.
Not according to this guy, Doug Benson, by the way, who won people smoking his venue.
Oh, he must be really fuming over the legalization. So it's legal in Michigan, but people write to me and say, now we're going to see you a lot in Michigan, aren't we? And I'm like, buddy. It's legal where I live, so I don't really need to come to you.
By the way, I'd also like to point out there's nothing easier to get when it was illegal the whole time. It wasn't hard to get.
I never had a problem.
Yeah.
No,
so when they say, it's legal, now you're going to come. Well, I haven't had a problem.
I've been getting it and using it pretty easily for a long time. That sentence sounded, that one out of context would be pretty good.
All right, we'll make a note. I like it. Doug Benson is playing Doug Loves Movies, 12 Guests of Christmas at the Largo at the Coronet again, Saturday and Sunday, December 2nd and 3rd. Tickets available right now through Doug Loves Movies. And don't sleep on the Doug Loves Movie podcast, by the way, available through iTunes, wherever you get yours, and also Getting Doug with High. And you just had a recently returned guest of Tommy Chong, who I just must be the most fun thing in the world for you.
Oh, it's wild. Like, you know, when I started getting into pot, because I was, you know, I was a late bloomer in regards to that. But ever since I got into it, I always thought of my, like, the Mount Cushmore, like the top four
right.
weed personalities in the world were, of course, Cheech and Chong,
right.
Snoop, and Willie Nelson. And I've smoked with all of them.
You have?
Yeah, so.
Who's left?
And they've all smoked with me.
Is there someone left? I mean, even if he's on the Rushmore, the Cushmore, is there someone?
Well, you know, there's plenty of musicians and comedians that would be cool. Obama, of course.
Yes, Obama. Sure. Everyone's a big one.
Elon Musk. Michelle, right?
I'd like to smoke with him. Oh, that Elon Musk smoking on Joe Rogan, that was interesting, I guess.
It was great. It was hilarious. All right, Doug, before we let you go.
Yeah.
60 seconds with Doug Benson. Kevin's going to fire questions at you. First thing that comes to your mind. I know you love it when you're put on the spot.
Why'd you moan?
If there's something that Doug Benson is known for, it's quick reflexes.
60 seconds with Doug Benson. What's your favorite Christmas movie?
Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Describe yourself in a hashtag.
Hashtag me as well.
What's your biggest fear in life?
Rapid fire questions.
What's something people would be surprised to find out about you?
I said this the last time. I love musicals.
What's your favorite food?
Sushi.
Do you have a secret talent?
Not a secret one. Pretty open about my talents.
Do you collect anything?
No.
What advice would you give your teenage self?
I wish they were all yes or no questions.
Would go too fast, though. I would have to write like 60 questions.
The teenage self needs to be told, just brush your damn teeth.
Yeah.
Just do it.
That's okay.
Yeah, because, man, is it...
Now, is it difficult now?
Now I can't do it. I've just given up entirely. No, but I just heard Sarah Silverman somewhere say, you know, death creeps in through the gums. And
that's nice.
You know what I mean? As soon as you're not brushing your teeth, you might as well be starting to die.
It's a very happy note to leave on as you head into the... Building a second Hollywood sign because too many people are trying to go to the original Hollywood sign is one of the dumbest ideas I've ever heard.
And by dumbest, you mean best.
Why not build 50 Hollywood signs then? Right? That way everybody
keep people guessing.
People could take a picture of the Hollywood sign from wherever they are in Southern California. How about that? Is that a does that solution make everyone happy? We'll talk about it coming up on K-Rock. It's 6:33. What's on your mind, Allie?
Oh, we haven't had a chance to talk about this yet.
Okay.
But I'm glad I can bring it up now. A lot of people ask, is this for real? Is Bean's life for real? The things that he says, mm-hmm. the way that he acts, is that really who he is?
Well, he's pretty extreme. A lot of times the stories we tell are pretty out there.
And yeah.
They're, I mean, maybe we exaggerate some for comedy, mm-hmm. but for the most part, Bean is Bean.
Yeah, and sometimes he says
things. We know you're there.
What's going
on
right now?
He doesn't quite understand, or a little weird, right. maybe a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But when I got this text from Bean's wife Donna the other day, I thought this needs to be chatted about. Bean, sit back for a minute, if you will, because
we're not going to need you just for a second.
I'm going to need some answers.
Why is the call coming from inside the house?
First, when it starts with, it's always my pleasure to have the sad truths of our lives exploited for you guys and your enjoyment. I knew the next text was going to be good.
Yes.
Again, this text from Bean's wife, Donna.
Okay.
Please ask Bean to tell you about inviting a 20-year-old co-ed jogger to come to our house to take a shower today. What? What are you talking about?
I have a lot of questions here. I have a lot of questions. Like, if she's jogging, you clearly weren't.
Right?
It's not like you were running alongside her going, hey, you need a place to shower.
What is going on?
What could possibly have happened?
Bean, what?
In what world? How did this happen?
I suspect Kevin's a little jealous that I came up with this idea before he did.
Are you just running next to joggers asking them if they need a shower?
And Bean has a very short window because he's not a jogger, so he can keep up for about 20 seconds and he's got to make it work.
Say yes, or you're going to leave me behind. I need an answer now.
Do you want a shower? And how did she not run immediately the other way?
Why is Donna texting this to you,
Allie?
Because she knows how much I love you and care. I want to help you through this.
Right.
What is happening in New Orleans right now?
Is this something we really have to talk about?
Yes.
Do I have to give an explanation?
Yes.
It's a very boring story.
We've been sitting on this, and it's been killing Allie. Every single day we schedule it, and then we bump it. It's killing her.
All right. I will tell you what.
20-year-old co-ed jogger.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Come shower at our house.
Come shower at our house.
Danielle, yes.
Bean
Danielle, he caught her name.
Maybe Bean has more game than anyone knows.
He does.
I couldn't get a 20-year-old to come take a shower at my house if I wanted to, nor would it ever occur to me. Bean's insane.
All right. I will tell
you
what happened.
Yes.
But I would first like to give you the opportunity to take a stab at it. Take a guess. Under what scenario could that possibly have happened? Because it is accurate. It did happen.
Okay.
20-year-old co-ed jogger.
Mm-hmm. She fell right in front of your house. She scraped up. And she needs to, you know, get the gravel and blood out of her knee.
Oh,
not very sexy, but I don't know.
And you were already on the ground from falling, so she fell right next to you.
All right, here's what happened.
Okay.
We had some very cold weather in the Gulf South in the last week or so, and a bunch of, hard to believe, the pipes in New Orleans that are hundreds of years old don't hold up under a freeze sometimes.
We had a bunch of pipes.
One pipe holds up. Yeah, Kevin.
Here we go again, right? Why do you try to make all my stories dirty? That's not what's happening here.
Be proud that your pipe held up,
right?
Yes.
So a bunch of pipes broke, and they issued a boil water advisory. And because, they had all sorts of silt and dirt and everything and contaminants were getting into the water. So they're like,
get to the sexy.
I'm going to. If you live in these parishes, including Orleans Parish, where I live, then you can't use your water. You have to boil it. Okay. Now, on top of that, because of all the pipes that were turned off and being repaired.
I've already boiled some water. You want to come over to the house?
Because all the pipes were being repaired, the water pressure was super, super low for lots of people. Okay?
Okay.
So many people, they would turn the shower on and there would be almost no water coming out.
Right.
Not enough to take a shower. Okay. So
you went door to door and knocked on all your neighbors' houses?
and looked for the young ones. Yes. So that's the backstory.
Okay.
So I'm out walking Linus the other day, mm-hmm. and here comes jogging Danielle, a woman who I know, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because she is from Pennsylvania, and she is a crazy bulldog person, too. She's got bulldogs at home.
Okay.
So every time we run into each other in the neighborhood, she stops and chats with me, plays with Bruska,
plays with
Linus.
Him, yeah.
We talk about bulldogs, right?
Yeah.
So we're having a conversation about the cold and whatnot.
Yeah.
Not sexy. And she says, all right, I'll wait till you're done. She says, I got a trip tomorrow. I'm going out of town. I'm going to Michigan, and I can't even take a shower. I can't go to the airport like this. I've got to take a shower before I go away on my trip. And in my mind, I'm thinking, my water pressure's fine.
I know a place you can get wet.
Oh, yeah.
Real wet.
I'll hose you down in the front yard.
Yeah, my pipes might be old, but they're good.
So I'm thinking in my mind, and this is where I think you guys are going to actually be proud of me.
Okay.
Nope. In my mind, I'm thinking, I know this lady. I would not say that we are friends. Like, I don't have her phone number or anything like that. But, I mean, we've run into each other multiple times.
How many is multiple, though? Is it three?
Five, probably. Five
okay,
times.
Five.
Yeah, so we know each other by sight and by name, okay?
Okay.
So I'm thinking the neighborly thing to do if you find out that somebody you know has no water pressure mm-hmm. is to invite them to your house to take a shower.
But
and
still,
then,
that's it. But still, that's a bold move.
Yeah.
For you to invite a 20-year-old girl over to your house to take a shower.
And here's where I think you guys will realize that I am learning as I go. In my mind, I thought that's the polite thing to do is mm-hmm. to help this lady out before her trip. But there's no way to make that offer to her without her potentially misinterpreting it. So
wow.
I did not.
Bean might be learned. What?
So wait, I did not offer her the shower opportunity. I slept on that, kept it under my hat, did not say, hey, come over to the house and take a shower. But then when I got home, I said to my wife, hey, I ran into Danielle. She had no water pressure, and I thought about offering her for a shower. And she said, just this once, though, right? Because if I ever come home and Danielle's taking a shower at the house, you're going to have some splaining to do.
So you went back out and scoured the streets?
What's her route?
I've been driving around for 8 hours. I can't find her.
I couldn't find her.
I need her naked body in my shower.
I'm furious now. So did I make the right decision by not offering it, or am I a terrible neighbor? Am I not helping somebody out who's got no water pressure?
No. I can answer that honestly.
Yeah.
You made the right decision
really?
By not offering.
Yes,
100%.
Because it would have been a polite thing to do. I think.
Yes, it would have been, and it also would have come across as creepy.
There's no way to ask a woman into your shower without it.
I feel like if you've met her five times and the age difference is quite something
significant.
You know,
yes,
I would say no. So were you able to – how did you phrase it then? How did you find her again?
I didn't. That was it.
That's the end of the story.
You didn't invite her?
Bean did the right thing, apparently.
I didn't invite her into my house to take a shower, and I went back, and I ran it by Donna, and she said it would have been fine if you had done that, but you made the right call by not offering it because there's no way – she would never have talked to you again. She would have pretended she didn't see you. She never would have seen the bulldogs again. She would have changed her route. She might have even moved out of the city if you had invited her.
Do you sit on your little porch every day
yes.
and knitting or crocheting or whatever you do and watch for her to run in front of your house?
Please come by. Please.
My shower works so well.
Where are you?
Our little Bean's growing up.
He's growing up.
Thank you for noticing.
So sweet.
Comedian Eddie F. joins us in a few minutes here on the world famous K-Rock. This is the Kevin and Bean Show at 8:07.
And don't forget, you are minutes away from Six Flags Magic Mountain. K-Rock Takeover is happening on November the 17th. We got tickets for you at 9 a.m. and then all throughout the day until 9 p.m. every hour at the top of the hour. By the way, has anyone checked on Eddie to see if he's scaled the outside of the building to get in?
Do not know. Do not know yet.
We found out today that he won't take elevators.
Yeah, which was a surprise to us.
Yeah. Some claustrophobia.
Extremely claustrophobic, yeah.
So this is his first visit to the new facility since K-Rock moved, so I don't know how difficult it's going to be for him. We may have to go down to the parking lot and interview him there, I guess is what I'm saying. That's the way it's going.
All right.
Hey, DJ Omar Khan.
Hey, you Hall of Fame radio broadcasters.
Oh, come on,
don't
man.
Even start like that.
What are you guys doing?
We were doing well right up until now.
You guys have nothing to worry about.
Look. We know we're terrible, okay? You're not going to come in here and break any news here. I know you do the B-Team podcast with your little friends, and you go back and listen to old tapes of the Kevin DeBean Show and critique it. Yeah. We know we suck.
Listen. I beg to disagree, because if you sucked, then you would not be in the Radio Hall of Fame.
Why don't you shut up and just get to the clips?
Alongside the likes of Vince Scully, Bob Hope.
I mean...
Jack Benny.
Unreal. Right.
Larry King.
What?
Yes, they all deserved it.
Casey
exactly.
Kasem.
No. Right.
A legend like Wolfman Jack.
I know. Wow. There was one mistake that was made, and it was the year they put it in the Hall of Fame.
I don't think they even knew it was us, because the day we got inducted to the Hall of Fame, they tweeted, congrats to Kevin and Bean from Kiss FM. They tweeted that. Yeah. I don't think they even knew it was us.
But I think they thought they were getting Seacrest.
Listen, you guys try to downplay your greatness.
Yeah, all right.
And,
what
you
do
know,
you got?
Allie, let's face it. We work with legends.
We
radio
really do.
Legends.
Right.
You know,
really
true.
Piling it on
okay,
here.
Let's get to the embarrassing clips.
I'm thankful.
They're approaching 30 years.
All right. Mm-hmm. Let's get to the clips.
On K-Rock. Yeah. Bring in the yucks. You know what I mean? They're just so awesome. And over the years, I've done a couple of song tributes to you guys. Mm-hmm. You know, I've done like...
You take all of the time right there, so...
Listen, you guys are masters of the mic. We all know that, right? You guys are titans of the talk.
Oh,
you guys
God.
Are behemoths of broadcasting. So I've done...
This is going to be really bad,
so I've done a couple of songs like, you know, Kevin's a big-headed drunkie, but, you know, I've been along this journey with you for about 15 years here with Kevin and Bean.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I have...
Are there any clips associated with
there
this?
Is, okay. There is. There is.
Can we get to those?
I'm going to do a heartfelt song tribute.
Oh.
Because, you know, I've always done a song kind of like, you know, mocking Kevin and Bean. Mm-hmm. And over the years, I think, post being inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame... You guys, like a fine wine, have gotten better with age. So I did a little tribute song, and this is all post,
right? And EF is right. We have to go downstairs to interview him in the parking lot.
We have plenty of time for this. So I put together a little tribute for you guys.
Oh,
and I want to give props to Trevor, the imaging director, did the vocals on this.
Oh, okay. No.
And this is just a little tribute to Kevin and Bean and how they've just gotten better.
You already said that.
Since being inducted to the Radio Hall of Fame.
Okay. All right.
Lately, I've been thinking, you guys sound so much crappier. You guys sound so much crappier. When the morning comes, you want to have some fun. But when you turn on the mic, we can hear you, and you sound so stupid and so dumb.
How are you, boy?
Every moment with, would you like to take that back? Because you talk for a living, and I can't believe they let you broadcast on it.
I don't know, so that's a toss-up.
You talk for a living. I cannot believe that you guys get paid to do this.
Sorry, I have to swallow.
You guys are freaking idiots.
I'm just a dumbass.
This is a tribute to...
Why?
Tribute to Kevin and Bean.
Tickets on sale Friday 10 at noon. Friday 10 at noon? Why would I say that?
Nope.
Very talented actor Dylan McDermott here on the K-Rock Morning Show. That's us, right, Kevin?
I don't think we've ever called it that.
You guys sound so much crappier. You guys sound so much crappier.
323-520-AFRO 24 hours a day.
No still afro with an H?
They had to do that emergency thing where they, whatever it is, they put on you to bring your breath back or whatever. It's like... Probably not the best description.
And then to get that response, just pours fire on the gasoline, whatever. However that one works.
Agreed.
However that works.
1-800-520-1067. That's the number for the Kevin DeBean Afro line. We have your calls on the air.
What? No.
Is that not right? 323-520-AFRO.
Yep.
That's the number for the Kevin DeBean Afro line.
Jesus. It is the Kevin and Bean Show at 22 minutes after 9 o'clock.
You are listening to... Oh, you already said that part.
Yep.
Hey, Dr. Drew's on the phone, you guys.
I said that part like 12 seconds ago.
You guys sound so much crappier. You guys sound so much crappier.
Now, I know that's a tenuous... What's the word I'm looking for after tenuous? Anyone? Just being quiet on purpose, because that's the rule. I know that's a weak example, is what I'm trying to say.
Would it be a connection? A connection? Connection? Could that be it?
Thank you, Bean. Connection is the word I could not think of.
Lately, I've been thinking, you guys sound so much crappier. You guys sound so much crappier.
Wow, this is something.
The only thing I can think is... Mistaken door. They thought they were going to doorbell identity. No, I was thinking. I'm not sure how to say it, but they meant to go to somebody else's house, got the wrong apartment or condo or house number, whatever you have.
How about wrong address? Like that?
That would have been a more succinct way to say it.
Yeah, you guys are real. What's the word I'm looking for? Discerning. You're really discerning. Woo!
Andrew Siciliano on the line. Andrew Siciliano, I should say, more pronounced the better.
Huh? What? You all right?
More pronounced better.
Oh, you blow. You blow. You blow.
That's the secret success. Secret to the success of that show.
Well said.
Oh, my God.
I mean...
Hall of
Fame! I mean, I gotta
guilty,
admit,
guilty.
I gotta admit, that was pretty good.
You're welcome.
I feel like we need some sort of redemption after that awful segment with our awful listeners, don't you?
Sure. Being cruel to people with disabilities, yeah.
Right?
That like, wasn't good. Like you and Kevin and Mike?
I mean,
hey, yeah. It's time for great news.
When you wake up, all you hear is bad news. So bad it makes you want to hit the snooze. Kevin and Bean can make that go away. It's time for great news today.
Great news!
This is a feature that Allie came up with last year that gives us the opportunity to spotlight the wonderful, beautiful things that human beings sometimes do for one another. And it oftentimes doesn't make the regular news, so we thought at least we can carve out once a week a little segment here to talk about these stories. And Allie, I think you're up first this week.
Yeah, I've read this story, and here's a shock. I cried. But it was the visual of this happening because we can all see it. The airport. It's a nightmare. People have high anxiety about flying. There are kids going nuts all over the place. This one woman, she was flying from L.A. to Portland, and she wrote about something that she observed that just moved her beyond words. She said on Facebook that there was a toddler who looked to be about 18 or so months old having a total meltdown, running between the seats, kicking and screaming, then lying on the ground, refusing to board the plane.
It's a nightmare.
And his young mom... clearly
left him behind.
No, clearly pregnant and traveling alone with him, was completely overwhelmed. She couldn't pick him up because he was so upset, kicking. She's pregnant. You don't want to take a kick to the belly. So the mom finally sat down next to her toddler, put her head in her hands, and just started sobbing, just completely overwhelmed with the moment. And that's when this woman that wrote on Facebook said she saw the most beautiful thing. 6 or 7 women from all around the boarding area just slowly walked over, and they encircled this woman, and each did something different to try and calm this little boy down. One gave a sippy cup that her kid had in his bag. Another one tried to sing Itsy Bitsy Spider. Another one was peeling an orange, so she let him help her peel the orange and have some of those slices, while another woman was comforting this mom. And it was all done completely silently. It's just 6 or 7 women getting up from their seats and just moved over to encircle this woman with love and compassion. And she ended the post with, "It occurred to me that a circle of women with a mission can save the world, and I'll never forget that moment." And it's just, it's so beautiful that you take the time out of whatever anxiety you're going through getting on a plane. Maybe you hate flying. Maybe your kid's a piece of work next to you. And you take that moment for another mom. And that's just beautiful.
That is beautiful.
You're going to cry again?
A little bit. That's my great news.
That's okay. A real It Takes a Village story right there, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah.
Mine comes from the town of Goodhue, Minnesota. It has a population of less than 1,000 people, and it doesn't have even a single traffic light. It's one of those tiny towns. Howard Snitzer, 54 years old, who didn't live there, was heading to buy groceries at Don's Foods, and he crumpled to the sidewalk, suffering a massive heart attack.
Oh, no.
The grocery clerk called 911. The only customer in the store, an off-duty correction officer, rushed to his side and began performing CPR. Across the street, the owner of a body shop heard the commotion and hurried over. And when the off-duty correction officer got tired, the guy from across the street started doing CPR on the guy. That changes the whole story.
They really took off his clothes so he was more comfortable.
As news spread, the numbers grew. In total, about 20 people worked to the point of exhaustion.
Yeah, they wanted to see a naked dude laying in the supermarket.
He wasn't naked.
Giving this man CPR for over 96 minutes.
Really?
Because there's no 911 in the town.
911, they were talking to, and they said, if he had a heart attack, keep going, keep going.
I would never have known that. I would think after 10 minutes, it's a lost cause.
20 minutes, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
They lined up, and as soon as somebody was out of energy, the next person would jump in, and they would give him CPR. A nurse that flew in on a Mayo Clinic helicopter said it was unbelievable to see that there was the guy giving somebody CPR and 20 people lined up behind him.
Oh, wow.
And none of them knew who that guy was. It wasn't like they knew him because he was part of that tiny little town.
And but he died at the end of this story, right?
He was in the Mayo Clinic.
Oh, he made it?
For 10 days, and he walked out and walked back to that town and thanked everybody for saving his life.
Oh,
someone stole
his
car while he was in the hospital?
No. It's all good, Dean.
I'm trying to figure out what the problem is here.
No, there's no problem. He almost died, and 20 different people saved him.
A bunch of strangers did a train on him, though. Wow.
Oh.
What's happening?
It's your story. Don't look at me.
You're changing my story. My story was great news.
Okay. And finally, on this edition of Great News, what do you think the number one cause for bankruptcy in the United States is?
Medical bills.
Russian
brides.
You are
correct.
Oh.
Medical bills. Crushing medical.
Did you say Russian brides?
Your debt. Okay. Crushing medical debt has millions of Americans really up against it because, let's face it, if you're sick, you don't have any choice. You got to go to the doctor. And a lot of times you go in for a little procedure, and the next thing you know, you get a $2,000 bill come to your house that you just can't pay. Those debts pile up, and eventually they get turned over to collection agencies. Now, this is something that I didn't realize. Listen to this piece of this report from Cairo 7 News in Seattle.
It's how medical debt is sold that doesn't help consumers, experts say. Medical debt can be sold multiple times. A $1,000 bill could be sold to a collection agency for as little as $10. However, the amount you owe can grow at 12% interest annually. In 6 years, the debt almost doubles while the agency still pays $10 for it.
And in some cases, we found that interest starts accruing from the moment you walk into the hospital facility.
Now, I didn't know that at all, and I had no idea that the medical debt was sold to collection agencies like that, pennies on the dollar, they do with mortgages, with people who are underwater on their houses. All right, so Cairo 7 did this story, and they interviewed lots of people, including one woman who was diagnosed as an early teenager with multiple sclerosis, and she's a perfect example of somebody who gets on that treadmill of having to have constant care and tests and everything else that she can never repay. She can never keep up from. So Channel 7 in Seattle decided, Jesse Jones, the guy who does this segment that I used to watch all the time when I lived there, by the way, decided that he was going to try to do something about it. So he got in touch with a company in New York that buys these medical debts. And listen to what happened next.
After hearing stories like Joelle's, we decided at Cairo to make a difference. So here's what we did. Cairo spent $12,000 to buy $1 million of medical debt. So what will we do next? We are forgiving every single cent of that debt. If your debt is forgiven, you'll get an envelope like this. The letters will go out to 1,000 people.
Now, because of HIPAA regulations, they don't know who these people are, but they contacted this company based in New York called RIP Medical Debt, which sounds like they're doing wonderful work nationwide. And they said, give us all the people you can find in the Seattle area, because that's our viewership. So 1,000 people are going to get letters in the mail that says you no longer owe this money. How wonderful is
that? That's phenomenal.
It's also shocking that you really don't owe that money anyway. Like, that company bought it for $10 for $1,000 or whatever.
Yes.
Unreal.
So it's not really, you really don't owe it, but still they're trying to capitalize on it.
Yeah, it'd be nice if they would give the patients the opportunity to settle that debt for pennies on the dollar instead of going after them with a collection agency and taking away their homes or whatever else. But anyway, I'm going to look into more of that information on the RIP Medical Debt Company out of New York. But that's a wonderful thing that Channel 7 did in Seattle, and that's my great news.
Exclusive K-Rock Street Team on sale for this year's Acoustic Christmas shows happens tomorrow at noon. Tickets for both nights are going on sale through Ticketmaster.com. You can get all the details at K-Rock.com if you want to be part of that weekend that is going to feature 22 excellent K-Rock artists, all performing spanning two nights, the 12th and 13th of December at the Forum. Again, tickets available at Ticketmaster.com. All the details at K-Rock.com. Hope to see you there.
You do need the password, so make sure that you sign up. All right. Mugs explains bees.
Bees! Woo!
Well, that's not a complicated topic. Bean, recap for people how this all came up.
I think it came up as simply as Ralph did a story in the Showbiz beat mentioning that Ian Ziering from Sharknado and Beverly Hills 90210 back in the day was going to be making an appearance at a hardware store the next day in the Valley protesting the use of pesticides that he and his wife were very active beekeepers think is killing off the bees, contributing to killing off the bees, which has become a major problem in America, particularly in California where so much of the nation's food is made. You can't make most foods without bee pollination. So we all thought it was hilarious that this is what Ian was doing with his time. So we talked to him on the air about the protest that morning, and then we sent Mugs down there. I think it started right around 10 o'clock that day to get some interviews with Ian, his wife Erin, and also the people who might have shown up to join the protest.
So, Mugs, how many people were down there when you got down there?
I'd say 8 or 9 people.
8 or 9?
Yeah.
Wow, okay. That's not a big turnout.
No.
But Muggs interviews Erin and Ian, which I think is great. Well, he starts interviewing Ian and his wife Erin, but Erin wasn't there at the time.
Okay.
So he tried a couple of different times to get things started.
I am here with Ian and his lovely wife Erin Ziering, and they're here. I am here with Ian Ziering and his lovely wife Erin. It's all right. She'll come over later.
You want to go again?
Yeah. That's Ian. That's Ian asking him if he wants to go again.
Want another run at that?
Just making sure.
What was Erin doing at the time you started the interview with her?
She was preoccupied with a real news outlet.
Why did you start the interview if she wasn't standing in front of you?
Well, because I thought she was going to come. I thought she was finishing up with that news outlet as I was starting. And no, she wasn't.
And you couldn't wait 30 seconds for her to troll over to where you were?
It looked like she was coming over to me, and then she got pulled back.
Yeah.
And that's what happened.
But at least she's ridiculously hot, right?
Ridiculously hot.
Yeah.
Good for Ian.
Yeah. So she's finally...
That wasn't the point.
Stick to the bees, Bean.
So she finally comes over, and now Muggs is talking to the happy couple. I'm sorry, talking at the happy couple.
Addressing not only a local problem, but a national problem.
Global problem.
Global problem. The vanishing of our world's honeybees. And we are at the Ace Hardware here in Studio City. And I noticed you guys walked into the store earlier. Not too bad of a confrontation with the manager. But he ended up being helpful in what you're doing is spreading awareness of the pesticides that are killing the honeybees.
Right.
Now,
is that a question, first of all? And you were summarizing, like, the run-in that they had with the manager?
Yeah.
Yeah, you were telling Ian what he'd just done.
Right. I had to make it elaborate for our listeners.
I see.
Ah, paint a picture, really.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, so Muggs is painting a picture. And I want you to hear Ian's participation before Muggs goes on, because Muggs loves Muggs. And Muggs does not really want answers. Muggs wants to talk.
What you're doing is spreading awareness of the pesticides that are killing the honeybees.
Right.
Now, I think the common misconception about bees in general is that they're all dangerous and they're going to sting you and you're allergic and you're going to die. But honeybees are...
Now, forgive me for just butting in here, but he's the guy down there talking about honeybees.
Yeah, right. You're not telling
he's
him
the expert.
New.
Why are you telling him the thing about honeybees? Is this a passion of yours?
I wanted to show him that I knew a little bit about the bees.
Okay.
But is that what the point of the interview is? Is for us to see how much you know about bees? Or is it to talk to the guy who's organized the protest, who's a beekeeper, to tell us what he knows about bees?
I suppose it's the latter.
You're doing good work.
Bees in general is that they're all dangerous and they're going to sting you and you're allergic and you're going to die. But honeybees are innately harmless, right?
Right.
I've noticed myself. I was telling Aaron earlier that
so far we've gotten two words out of the happy couple.
Right.
Right. And right. And then Muggs takes the microphone back and just keep. This is a filibuster. That's what's happening right now. Muggs is doing a one-man show. And they're just standing there looking at him, trying to figure it out.
In this area, when I was a kid and during the summertime, when spring is blooming, you'd see a lot of honeybees. But now it's real. Like, I don't see that many out there. And it's kind of concerning, especially since they're a big part of our ecosystem now.
Okay, I just want to point out.
Oh, my wow. God.
I just want to point out we're a minute 15 in.
Okay.
And we've gotten, you want to try that again? And then right and right.
It's you're right, Kevin. It's a filibuster. He's trying to wear Ian down, so Ian hates bees at the end of it.
It's a filibuster.
Get out.
Oh, jeez.
That wasn't bad, Bugs. I mean, really, let's be honest. All right, let's continue.
Can you get the EPA involved, maybe? Is that
the EPA is involved. So, again, awareness is growing. Change is happening. Unfortunately, it just happens slowly.
Where can people go to get information and be, turn the ignorance around to honeybees?
All right. Well said.
Sorry. Yep. Nailed it.
You want another run at that question?
Turn the ignorance around to honeybees.
They can visit the Friends of the Earth organization.
And I saw somewhere real quick, there was a grid.
Is this unbelievable?
Wow.
Is it unbelievable?
Yes.
It's unbelievable.
When I was a kid, I used to be scared of bees.
They didn't even have to be there. Muggs could have taped this interview in the parking lot of K-Rock without them.
Turn the ignorance around to honeybees.
They can visit the Friends of the Earth organization.
And I saw somewhere real quick, okay. There was a grid that said without honeybees, we wouldn't have a lot of items like in, when it comes to produce and a lot.
Two-thirds of the things that you put into your mouth are because of a honeybee population.
Yeah. Well, people, if you like your honey, do something about it.
Right. That's the call to action right there.
Yeah!
If you like your honey, do something about it.
But you guys have to admit, you're now more well-informed about the bee situation.
I mean, here's the thing that I would like to focus on, because then Muggs goes on and talks to other people about bees. People.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. People who really aren't there for the bees.
Oh,
and,
no.
And really don't know much about the bees.
Oh.
But the two-thirds of the food that we eat is Muggs' question to every single one of them. And he tries to school them all. So he'll say, are you upset about the bees? And they'll go, no. And he'll go, well, did you know 2/3 of the food that you eat, you wouldn't have if it wasn't for bees.
So they were just down there to see the guy from Sharknado.
Probably. Or to,
that's
or,
why they came
or to buy something at the shop.
Right, get a
right,
hammer.
They could have just been going to the hardware store, right.
some nails. And Muggs is asking them about the bees and then trying to shame them into caring about the bees. Oh. It's spectacular. All right, we need to take a break.
Okay.
Can we keep the... All right, we have... Because I think he does like 4 more interviews with people. All of them humor him, and he pretty much schools them.
Oh, I'm in.
That's what I do.
I'm in.
So Muggs Explains Bees, part 2 next.
Hey, if you're just joining us, we are halfway through Beer Mug Explains Bees. He went down to a anti-pesticide protest at a hardware store in the Valley a couple weeks ago with Ian Ziering from Sharknado and his lovely wife, Erin. And so far, we've really heard very little from them, but a lot from Muggs. And now you're telling me he's let the celebrities go, and now he's just walking around just assaulting customers in the hardware store?
Just walking up to people who really don't care about bees and asking them if they're upset that bees are dying. And he is stuck on this. Without bees, you wouldn't have 2/3 of the food you eat. You'll see as we go along that Muggs doesn't know any more than that, except for that number. Like, he doesn't know.
He doesn't know the actual foods?
No, God, no.
Oh.
No. He knows fruit in general. Just some fruit and honey. That's how he explains it. So he asked his first girl if she's upset about the bees dying.
Well, they're pretty important to our environment, I'm sure.
Yeah, they're responsible for about 2/3 of what we eat. So if they're gone, which is a result of all the pesticides that they put in all these pesticides. Oh. Naturally. So do you like bees?
Yes.
That's right. They put pesticides in pesticides.
Naturally. You then said
naturally.
Of course.
What word were you looking for?
Chemicals.
Chemicals.
Yes.
Chemicals.
Yes.
They put the pesticides.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Didn't happen, but that's the word I was looking for.
That was the best thing I've ever heard. Oh. And then when he finally, he just gave up and just said.
So do you like bees?
You like them?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess.
She doesn't care. Nobody cares. That's the thing.
No.
Look. Everybody has their pet project or whatever. Uh-huh. And right. I talk about my charity a lot, and other people have their charities a lot. Some charities are harder to talk about than others. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I feel bad for people who love bees, like my friend Bean, who's going to be a beekeeper mm-hmm. one day,
I do love bees. And everything Ian is saying is true, by the way, and it really is a crisis that I'm glad he's putting on people's radar, but I don't know that Muggs is the guy to spread that word.
Well, that's the weird thing, is that once Muggs talked at Ian... He didn't listen, but he talked. Then he sort of took up the cause.
Yeah.
Like, now he's assaulting people, and he's upset that they're not upset about the bees dying.
It's so weird. If I could make just a larger macro point here, I always wonder how these assholes that join ISIS get indoctrinated. They're Muggs. Basically, they hear something one time, and they go, all right, I'll do that.
I'll do
and then they just go out, and they just start spreading the word. They just become that guy they just saw on TV talking for a minute.
Dare you!
All right, so here's Muggs talking to another guy who does not care. And this is the weird thing. Like, you have to assume people aren't going to care about bees if you want to tell them something about it. But Muggs has no interest in that. He's just going to shame them.
Excuse me, sir. Can I get your thoughts about all the honeybees dying off?
The honeybees dying off.
Yeah, they're all dying, and they're responsible for about 2/3 of what we eat, and they're a major part of our ecosystem.
Because global warming.
Could you elaborate?
It's getting hot.
How does Muggs bet his match? How does that guy bring in global warming? Elaborate. It's hot.
It's hot. Right.
All right. This guy straight out hates
bees. Game show, by the way.
This guy straight out hates bees, and Muggs is not going to have it.
Excuse me, sir. What do you think of all the honeybees dying off?
What?
What do you think of all the honeybees dying off?
I think that's great. I can't stand bees.
You know they're responsible for about 2/3 of what we eat.
I don't care. My girlfriend's allergic to them. She hates them, and I hate them.
But
okay. Now this is fascinating to me because he's not just saying okay, great, or whatever. Might I share? So mm-hmm. He's getting a little indignant.
Yeah, let me drop some knowledge on you. Change things.
Moses is upset with
this. Yeah, honeybees are very harmless. It's a common misconception. You know, they're not wasps or yellow jackets. They're honeybees. They're friendly.
They're stupid, is what they are. They're stupid. Oh. Stupid bees.
Thank you, sir.
I gotta give that round to the shoppers.
You gave up way too easy.
The amount of time from you're an idiot, I'm going to school you, to thank you, sir, is about 4 seconds.
Carry on.
The guy just had to say one more thing, and that's it.
I was out.
With you, Muggs.
All right, so one more interview with somebody who doesn't care about bees.
Excuse me, sir, what are your thoughts about the honeybee population dying off?
It's terrible.
How so?
I mean, any population dying off is just really saddening to me. And the honeybees they make good honey.
That is a good point. Did you know that they're all...
They make good honey. That's a good point. How is that a good point? Come on. So this guy clearly doesn't know anything about the issue, except for that they make...
They make good honey.
That is a good point. Did you know that they're also responsible for about 2/3 of what we eat?
2/3 of the food we eat, mm-hmm. right.
As well as honey?
Well, I don't eat bees, so I didn't know that.
Not eating bees, but
he's upset.
What they produce, we eat.
Oh, gotcha. They just make honey, as far as I'm concerned.
So you're neither here nor there. You don't care what happens to the bees. I mean, they do. They're a part of the ecosystem.
No, I didn't say that. I like the bees.
Oh.
I'm for the bees. You know, I'm all about them bees.
Can we hire that guy and fire Muggs?
How dare you?
I just think you're terrific.
I had a
chiropractor appointment yesterday, and I don't know how I got on the topic with Dr. Mike of aliens, but he told me that his father worked for the government and he had taken photographs of live and dead aliens.
And your next sentence was, can I see them?
I didn't say that, but
why?
I do think this involves further explanation and further discussion with Dr. Mike, because
yeah.
He said it was not it was something that his father told him his whole life, and that it was something that he rock solid believed in, and that it was just a fact, just happened. And I find it difficult to believe, but would we be surprised if the government had that information and didn't share it with us?
Nope.
Here's the thing. The government is hugely inept, though. Mm-hmm. So can you imagine the number of people who would have to not let that leak? I don't think they could keep it quiet if they had that.
And that's what I have thought my whole life about the people who still believe the conspiracy theory that the moon landings were faked, is the number of people that would have had to have been involved in making that hoax. Somebody would talk at some point.
And especially these days, it's so easy to get that message out without mm-hmm. being identified or whatever. You're going to have people talk when they shouldn't.
Unless.
They could not keep it quiet.
Unless their brains have been reprogrammed to get rid of those memories.
I didn't think about that.
Boom.
I didn't think about that.
Yep.
That's a good point.
Just listen to me.
Well, Conspiracy Alley, you'll enjoy this. We have had a discussion a couple of days ago. We had a discussion about a new survey that came out. They surveyed 1,200 adults in France, and 8 out of 10 French people regarded at least one popular conspiracy theory as true.
8 out of 10?
8 out of 10 believed. No, that doesn't mean they're all crazy and believed everything, but 8 out of 10 believed at least one of them. So we thought it might be worth reintroducing this topic now and getting our listeners to call in. If you believe, along with the people surveyed in this French survey, if you believe any of these conspiracy theories, we want to hear from you.
So you just need to believe one.
You just have to believe any
or
one
all.
Of them.
Yeah, whatever.
Because and by the way, maybe you're right. It's very possible that you're right and most people are wrong, and you can explain to us why you believe what it is you believe. So this survey, again, 1,200 French adults. Results were published on Sunday. Of the well-known theories, one is claims that the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency was involved in the assassination of John F. Kennedy, the 35th American president, in 1963. 54% of respondents believed that the CIA was involved in assassinating the president. And I look at this, and again, is it possible? Yes. But if the CIA were going to kill the president, why would they do it in front of so many witnesses?
Because no one would see that coming.
Yep, that's what you'd say.
Right? Hey, we need to do it in public view, then no one will think it's us.
If you believe the CIA was involved in killing the president, call us now, 1-800-520-1067. Up next, the Apollo moon landing hoax, as we reference, which generally believes that men never stepped on the moon in 1969 and that some or all of elements of the Apollo program and the associated moon landings were hoaxes staged by NASA. 16% of the respondents said, I believe that.
Okay.
Why would we do that? Was it just to make America look good and look scientifically as we were leading the world if we could land on the moon where no one else had?
Sure.
I mean, that's the only thing that makes sense. Otherwise, why do that?
And I guess you could feed into that argument even today by saying, all right, if the Americans were able to land on the moon, why has nobody else since then ever landed on the moon?
Mm-hmm.
Why is the U.S. still the only country that's landed on the moon if it's so goddamn easy?
Right.
16% say Apollo moon landing hoax. All right. The most popular conspiracy theory, very widely held in France by 55% of the respondents, is that the government of France is conspiring with pharmaceutical companies to hide the danger of vaccines. And this one is very common in our country, too. You guys have seen all the vaccine controversy in recent years, even though the government keeps coming out and saying, no, vaccines are safe, no, vaccines do not cause autism. There are people who believe the government is in bed with the pharmaceutical companies and they are hiding something to, I guess, damage their own people's health, right?
I guess.
55% believe that.
The French are dumb.
Kevin, who's with you, you think this would be any different in our country?
Absolutely not.
I would hope not. So. And by the way, we're going to find out because we're going to talk to our listeners at 1-800-520-1067. If you believe any of these. All right, we got one more, I think, and that is this one. Two more. 10% of the respondents thought it was possible that the Earth was flat. Now, we have discussed the flat Earth phenomena in recent months because of rapper B.O.B. I still am pretty convinced that we're living on a globe.
Well, you're an idiot.
All right, how about this one? God created life on Earth less than 10,000 years ago. These are Bible folks, right? These are people who believe that the Bible is the literal word of God, even though science can say billions of years. People who believe in the Bible being literal say less than 10,000 years. 18% agreed with that. So those are the theories that were run by Frenchie. 8 out of 10 people in the survey believed at least one of those conspiracy theories as true. And we are looking for Americans that are listening to this show who believe in any of the above.
All right, let's start with Mike in Downey. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
Hey, Mike. We're good.
Good. I actually really quick just wanted to talk about the assassination of Martin Luther King. There is a civil case in which the government was found civilly liable for actually assassinating Martin Luther King. And it's interesting because he and Malcolm X, their ideas were kind of converging at that time. Martin Luther King, of course, was a leader of the nonviolence movement, and Malcolm X was a lot more radical. And as Martin Luther King was starting to see that his nonviolence movement was not becoming successful, he started becoming a little bit more radical. And that's around the time that the government was found civilly liable and actually did assassinate.
Is that one of the ones we mentioned, Bean?
No, it's not. But I mean, it's in the same ballpark, which is the government just kills people that are in the way of whatever it is the government or the Illuminati or the shadow government or the global elite or whatever are trying to accomplish. I mean, that's the sister theory of they killed JFK, I guess. But what about the guy that was there that shot Martin Luther King and what about that guy? They think he was hired by the government to shoot him?
That's the idea. The civil case found that it was a conspiracy from certain officials from the U.S. government. So I think that goes along with that theory, yes.
And how about to JFK? You believe we were behind that, too? The government was behind killing the president, too?
I don't know much about that. I wouldn't be surprised, but, you know, I'd have to have more facts.
Earth is flat?
No, definitely not.
Okay.
Just checking.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate the call. Appreciate you listening. We got a lot of JFKers here, by
Yes,
the
we
way.
Do.
Mm-hmm. Let's do one more. Let's do Matt in Buena Park while we're on the topic of the president's assassination. Matt, you're on the air. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, guys. Thanks. Hey. Long time, first time.
Thank you. Thank you.
Just like MLK with JFK, they got the mob to do it. That's how they sort of did the dirty work.
They, meaning the CIA?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
The real reason that I believe in it is because, if you'll remember, Trump was talking just nonstop smack about the CIA, and then he got to get all of the declassified papers, and we haven't heard peep from him since then. Just nothing. And it's like, I feel like that's like you met a new girl, and like you're talking smack about her ex-boyfriend, and all of a sudden you found out that he definitely murdered someone, and you're like, nah, it's whatever, it's in the past, I don't want to talk about it.
So the president, our current president, then, is too afraid now to smack talk the CIA because he knows what they're capable of because of all the other U.S. presidents they've killed.
That's what the path of least resistance says to me. Yeah, I think so. All right.
Or plot twist, if it really was the mob, Trump doesn't want to reveal that because of his ties to the mob.
Boom! Your accusations have been made. Yes, ma'am.
Boom!
Not many.
Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. All right. 1-800-520-1067. That's the number. If you believe any of these conspiracy theories, by the way, should we open it up to others that maybe weren't on this particular list or no?
I mean,
just stick to these.
You have to believe one of these, and then you can tell us another one if you'd like.
All right. 1-800-520-1067. We'll take your calls next. Okay, Rex.
Just ahead of the M83 song, let's take one phone call. We're talking about conspiracy theories that you believe, and let's go to Phil in Whittier. Hi, Phil.
Hey, Phil. Hey, how you doing?
Good, thanks. We're doing all right. What's going on, man? Which one of these conspiracy theories believed by the French do you also believe?
I believe the one about the fake landing of the Apollo 13 mission.
You do? Apollo 13 didn't land, though. See?
Whichever one landed, I'm sorry.
All right.
He's done his research.
So the U.S. never was stepped on the moon. That's what you're saying.
Right. If you take into consideration all the fact that we're surrounded by a very thick radiation belt, which has been proven by NASA, and you take into consideration just how really crappy the technology was back then, you know, it kind of makes you wonder that we've evolved so much in such a short amount of time. Why isn't that we're not sending more expeditions to the moon itself?
Yeah, been there.
Well, first of all, President Trump says he wants to go back to the moon and then on to Mars. Second of all, the reason we stopped doing it is because NASA lost funding. The public lost interest in it, and I think they maybe ran out of scientific surveys to do after being there five times.
But, Phil, let me ask you a different question. Do you really think all the people that would have had to have been involved in that fake could have kept their mouths shut all this time? Everything that happens gets leaked.
Yeah, I think so, but when you think about also the fact that, I mean, you can make this kind of conspiracy theory within a studio with a very small amount of people. I don't think that would be a problem that you have to keep hundreds of people quiet to keep it under wraps.
So you think someone like Buzz Aldrin, American hero Buzz Aldrin, has been walking around lying about being the second man on the moon for 60 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, because the CIA will kill him.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Yep. All right, Phil. Love you. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for calling 1-800-520-1067. More conspiracy theorists next on The Kevin and Bean Show. And then we talk to Ricky Gervais coming up on K-Rock. Run it by me again, Allie. What's going on with Avril Lavigne?
Wasn't it that Avril Lavigne has been dead for years and they just had somebody that looks just like her that's kind of taken over so nobody really knows that she died?
They replaced her with a double.
They did. And what was the other cuckoo one that JonBenet Ramsey is actually Katy Perry?
Yeah, not only is she still alive, not only was she not murdered as a little kid in Colorado, but she grew up to become Katy Perry. See, the French, they didn't ask that in the French conspiracy theories. They didn't even get to those
thorough.
Ones. I guess not.
And Marilyn Manson is the older brother on Mr. Belvedere.
I've heard that too, yes. but Mr. Rogers, though, what about all those tattoos and all those confirmed kills in Nam?
Right?
We are talking conspiracy theories on the Kevin and Bean Show because of this new study that just came out last weekend in France. They surveyed 1,200 French citizens, and 8 out of 10 believed at least one of the popular conspiracy theories. L'Oreal writes in, by the way, my coworker, who has a master's degree in math, by the way, is convinced that the moon landing was fake. She says she saw a documentary. Hashtag sigh. Hashtag conspiracy theories. So we're taking your calls at 1-800-520-1067. Why don't we go to, let's go to Paul in Van Nuys, and I hope Dr. Drew is listening because his head will explode when he hears this.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Thank you for calling and for holding on. Which conspiracy theory that the French believe do you also believe?
The vaccines.
So the government is working with Big Pharma to hide the danger of vaccines.
Well, yeah, you have to ask yourself, why do they have a lawsuit fund set up in the background so that when victims of the vaccines get damaged, that they can sue the government? That's one. And also on top of that, if you remember when you were a young boy or young lady, that you only got about 10, maybe 12 shots. The vaccines were also had a shelf life and were refrigerated. Now they're not. And now kids today get up to 72 different vaccines throughout the course of their shot.
But no, Paul, let me just... No kid gets 72 vaccines, by the way. None. Not one.
You can look that up. It's right there.
Right there at Infowars.com, is it?
What's that? I'm sorry?
What about science?
What about it?
Okay. Thanks for the call. All right, where are we going next?
You got no time for vaccine theory?
No. I really don't.
Look, the reason
I think it hurts a lot of, I think a lot of kids get sick because they're not vaccinated, and then it puts all kids at danger.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
I don't have any time for that.
All right. How about 911 is an inside job? You want to do Fatty? He's in Lord. Hawthorne. Hey, come on. Loose change, man. Listen up. Fatty.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hi. What's going on? Talking about conspiracy theories that you believe. You're a 9/11 truther?
So 9/11 and the moon landing. So 9/11, how many cameras are around the Pentagon? And we still don't have any footage of a giant 747 plane hitting the Pentagon.
I cannot answer that question, but I saw live television coverage of the plane seconds after it ran into the Pentagon, so I believe that it did.
Okay. So where's the black box behind it, which
miraculously every black box gets found when there's a plane crash.
Look, here's the thing about conspiracy theories is that there you can always find a question or two that doesn't have a satisfactory answer. Doesn't mean that the truth isn't the truth.
And you don't need a black box if a plane is hijacked and they force a pilot to fly it into a building. The black box isn't going to tell you anything beyond that.
All right.
Okay. All right. Well, that was surprisingly easy.
I feel like he gave up too easy. You got to be more solid in your convictions, dude.
I feel pretty good about it. All right. Ricky Gervais coming up next on K-Rock.
He makes his guest later this hour here on the Kevin and Bean Show, and RJ Bell talks football in 1 hour from Las Vegas. Our friend Jensen Karp is a pop culture early adopter, which is why we do this feature every week called Get Up on This.
Get up.
Guys, when it comes to Get Up on This, I try my hardest to keep it varied, especially when it comes to music picks. Because if you let me have it, I'm going to play French Montana all day long.
Sure.
Just continuously. No stopping. Barely any talking. Just me dropping maybe an air horn every once in a while. So I try to gravitate away from hip-hop for you. I've gotten you up already on a couple of those. We've had R&B picks. We've had a couple good rock band picks. But it's time we gravitate towards pop music this week.
Pop music, okay.
Because I'm a fan of pop music when it's really good. I know that I'm very Bean-like about that.
Well, when it's really good, though, but 10% of it is really good.
That's
and then
true.
The rest is all copying the 10%.
Yeah, or just bubblegum and doesn't have any real substance in it. So when it comes to 24-year-old Alec Benjamin.
Never heard of.
Either of you?
Bean? No.
All right, good. We had Billie Eilish on the show.
Yes.
And she's incredible. And what I like about her and what you'll be seeing from her at Absolute Almost Acoustic Christmas is a smart, beyond her years, mature songwriting technique, which she does along with her brother, but something that actually brings something to the table, not just like a, you know, Britney Spears Toxic, which is a bop.
Stop using the word bop.
But at the same time is also just sort of, you know, it's a song you just dance to or whatever. These songs to me actually have thought and emotions and their own personalities into
them. You're articulating that very well, Jensen. And let me add, my favorite kind of pop music is pop music that is specific to that person.
Yes.
Like you feel like Toxic is a great song, but it could have been recorded by 20 other artists.
Exactly.
And I know that Kevin hates to admit it, but Taylor Swift is the only one who can do Taylor Swift songs because they're very personal.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about Billie Eilish, and I'm excited to learn about Alec Benjamin.
Yes, and Alec Benjamin's a similar way. Progressive songwriter, mature tone, goes above his years. You're going to love it. And it draws in adults as well. That's the thing. It's like in addition to the kids that love pop music, it'll bring in weirdos like Bean and I. Originally from Phoenix, but now out of Los Angeles, he went to USC and moved to LA because of that. And he released his first music out of a dorm room back in 2014, which got the attention of record labels. And his YouTube channel became very successful and popular. But he has had a slightly rough ride in the industry until these last few months when he had a breakout song called Let Me Down Slowly, which now earned over 85 million streams. Let's listen to that.
Wow.
If you want to go, then I'll be so lonely. If you're leaving, baby, let me down slowly. Cold skin, drag my feet on the tile as I'm walking down the corridor. And I know we haven't talked in a while, so I'm looking for an open door. Don't cut me down, throw me out, leave me in a waste. I once was a man with dignity and grace. Now I'm slipping through the cracks of your golden embrace. So please, please, could you find sympathy, I hope you can show me. If you wanna go, then I'll be so lonely. If you leave.
When his voice changes, he's going to be in trouble.
Yeah, it's going to be a nightmare. Also, when people stop hitting him in the crotch over and over right before he sings. But I love the voice. That's the weird part. Is that
I do too, but it was very unexpected.
Yes. He's also 24, which isn't necessarily young. But he's able to sort of have that bedroom R&B pop sound, but also have these sort of heavy lyrics that aren't just throwaways. He's toured over the world, all over the world over the past 2 years. He also, as a kid, it's kind of a cute story and it shows up in all his press. He used to drive to local shows when he was performing. So he'd go city to city, but then find out like Shawn Mendes is nearby performing at a big arena. So he would go there, perform for the parking garage and stuff and in line.
Really?
And then he would force people people to come to his shows with like a card, and people remember him from that. There's a reason people like Taylor Swift are massive. It's because they are able to have this type of music that speaks to so many people. He's currently on an 18-city tour that is completely sold out. But you can get the tickets online, and we'll get into that in a minute. It's all this music is from a new mixtape he put out last week called Narrated for You. It's downloadable everywhere. He's really good at examining and talking about the pitfalls of youth through storytelling that normally would make my eyes roll, like, oh, teenagers. But like on this song, the nostalgia-soaked 1994, he shows a little bit more depth.
I wanted to be just like them, just like them, just like them. Campbell's chicken noodle soup. When you stay home from school, remember watching MTV. When there was still music for you, just a kid on Troya Street. From my city built in the sand, my father said you'll be a man, be a man, be a man.
I like it. Well, that's good.
He's great, right?
Yeah, that's really good.
He's going to be at the Roxy on December 7th, but that is sold out, so you'll be paying top dollar on one of those second sites. But listen, he's great, and this is my favorite song from him. It's called I Built a Friend, and it's touching as hell.
We had so much fun together. We had so much fun. Then I left for college in September, and we wept. We can't be together, so I kept pictures to remember my old friend, my old friend.
Kid's great. He's one to watch.
All right, we're sold already.
All right, again, his name is Alec Benjamin. If you enjoy thoughtful pop, that is for you, and that is my Get Up On This.
Get up, get on up, on this.
Get up, get on up,
on this.
Get up,
get on up,
on this.
Get up.
Are there any words that give you the heebie-jeebies?
Yes.
Words you'd be willing to say out loud?
Moist.
Really? You're a moister.
Nope, I am not. I hate that word.
Why?
I can't. It's just, no.
But have you ever stopped to think about why? Why does that one word give you the heebie-jeebies?
Yeah, because it's gross.
Why is it gross?
I don't want to explain to you why it's gross, Bean, but trust me, it's gross.
Well, maybe this news report will help make some sense of it.
It's the word that everyone hates. It sends shivers down people's spines and makes their face cringe. Why does this one word evoke such an intense reaction? Why is the word that shall not be said moist?
Ah! Why do you say it like that? Oh, my God.
Moist.
Well, now I don't even have to go on with this story. Now I can just play.
Moist.
All right. So they have done research into why that word, more than any other word, is the word.
Oh,
and by the way, you're going to be surprised to hear. What do you think the percentage is of people who feel like you do, Allie, that have a problem with that word?
I'd say over 50. So let's go 63.
You say 63. And again, if you're just joining us, we're talking about
moist. Oh.
All right, let's find out.
Moist psychologically is a very loaded word. According to a research study conducted by psychology professor Dr. Paul Thibodeau, around 18% of American English speakers...
18%!
Huh.
That's all it is. So the vast majority of people are completely fine with that word, but those people who hate it are pretty vocal about
and
it.
And I don't think they've heard him say it.
Yes, the way he says it might up that number considerably.
Hate the word moist. And the hate behind moist stems from words association.
When I think of the word moist, other words I think of are sponge, sticky, thick.
Go on.
Yeah, you know, I kind of start thinking of, maybe some, like, bodily fluid type of grossness, maybe some, like, sweatiness, or I don't want to use the word discharge, but I just said discharge.
Oh, sure. My God, it's too early for this, Bean.
He's not making it any better, is he? Is that the problem with you, is association with bodily functions? Is that your moist problem?
Yeah.
It is okay?
The word moist is fine. I don't care about the word moist. I've never hated it.
Dr. Thibodeau looked into three hypotheses. Maybe it was the way moist is pronounced that disgusts people. Or possibly it's the word's connotation that makes people cringe. Or it could be that people are simply jumping on the cultural trend that moist is a gross word.
By the way, I think there's a lot of that going on. I think moist is one of those things, like people who are say they're afraid of clowns because other people are afraid of clowns. I don't think they have any problem with moist, but they know that that's the thing to not like is moist. I honestly believe there's a lot of bandwagoning going on.
Moist clowns.
Moist clowns are the best clowns. I also don't know why this psychological study has to have this dance bed underneath it. I don't know why.
It's very peppy.
I don't know why everything has to have music on it, but it does on the internet.
Posers.
I don't hate the word moist because other people hate the word moist. I'm perfectly capable of hating my own things all by myself.
Participants were asked what they thought of the word moist when grouped together with other words like phlegm and vomit and words related to sex. Dr. Thibodeau also asked what they thought of the words that sound like moist, like foist and hoist and rejoice.
Now, how about that, Allie? Do you have any problem with hoisting and foisting?
No, why would I? They don't...
But they sound so much like moist, though. Well, let's find out.
Foist is an awesome word. Hoist is the awesome word. Rejoice is an awesome word.
I know. I don't mind those words. I think hoist is a word that is necessary in conversation sometimes.
When was the last time anyone used the word hoist?
Monday.
Oh, really? All right.
I'm going to hoist the result that over suggested my head.
Is that what you said?
Yeah.
You actually used it in a sentence. Okay,
no.
That's fine.
The result suggested that people don't like the word moist because of its connection to body fluids and functions and phlegm and vomit. But that's not all. The study also found there was a bandwagoning effect happening.
Okay, here you go.
When researchers showed two groups, two different videos, one where male celebrities are awkwardly saying the word moist.
All right, now here's going to be the key that's going to break you of your dislike for the word moist. Listen to what they showed the second group. The first group is celebrities awkwardly saying the word moist. Here's what they showed the second group.
And one where moist is being used to describe cake.
Boom! When you hear the word moist, Allie...
You really think you healed me?
Yes.
No.
You don't think phlegm. You don't think discharge. You think cake.
I recently had a server describe the cake as the moistest cake they've ever had, and I was like, I'm out.
But that's a delicious piece of cake right there. Moist cake is the best cake.
Well, moist cake can be something else, too.
Only the group that watched the first video reacted negatively.
I sort of feel like if there is a bandwagon, something is genuinely wrong with that word.
Don't jump in the bandwagon. If all your friends jumped off the word moist, would you...
There you have it.
Okay, so there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, the scientific survey on the word moist, 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 moist.
Hey, you guys. Beer mugs.
Yes!
Studio and sitting in front of a microphone.
Beer mugs allowed. Mic
should I turn it
turn
on?
Turn his mic on.
Okay, just
come
as
on, you then.
It's on you then.
You need me for this.
At this point, you have to at least acknowledge that you're aware the beer mug works here.
I mean, he works here, but does that mean I turn on his microphone automatically?
Yes, that's what it means.
That's a bad choice, Bean.
Beer mug is part of the family, and it's the holidays, and he should be welcome at our table.
Thank you.
Hey, it's time for Bean Mix's Guess.
Bean Mix's Guess, yeah.
Ooh, ooh.
Bean Mix's Guess, yeah.
Who gets penis slapped?
Bean is a dick.
Pretty dope, man.
Just want to tell ya.
I'm the dumbest human that ever lived.
Now it's time for Remix's Guess.
Yes!
I don't see how those clips are appropriate to what we're doing.
We've had that conversation before, asked and answered.
I would have felt a lot better about this topic had K-Rock not posted it on all of its social media yesterday ahead of doing Remix's Guess, so I'm afraid that you guys have already read the article. But there was a headline made when the Queen biopic, Bohemian Rhapsody, crossed the $128 million mark and is now the second highest domestic grossing music biopicture of all time. Now, this does not include documentaries. This is just, they hire an actor to play a musician, a real-life musician. And there's a long history of movies that have been made about musicians, groups, and solo artists. Bohemian Rhapsody is now number two on the all-time list here in the United States. So what I'm going to ask you guys to do is tell me what else is in the top 10. What other movies made about musicians are in the top 10 all-time U.S. box office? Again, no documentaries, and I'll also save you this guess. It looks like they don't consider Spinal Tap a real band.
Garbage.
Because that was a comedy made-up band for the movie. So you don't have to guess Spinal Tap. So Bohemian Rhapsody, we know, is number two. Kevin, you are up first. What movie do you think might also be in top 10? In fact, you might even want to think, what could be the highest grossing of all time?
Walk Hard.
That was an actual real guess from Kevin. Did you read the article yesterday?
No.
Number three.
Chipper.
Wow. Number three. In fact, that's the one that the Queen movie went ahead of. The story of Johnny Cash and June Carter has made $119 million. Bohemian Rhapsody just went ahead of that.
That's Claim Walk the Line.
That's Walk the Line.
Walk Hard is the comedy.
Is everything you said opposite? No fake bands.
No.
So, okay.
I thought you said Walk the Line.
I had Walk the Line on my little
list.
I'll take
Walk the Line as my choice.
I'm going to give Kevin Walk the Line because I misheard it.
Oh, man. I hope you mishear me.
Got a point.
Kevin got a point. I'm so sorry. I feel like a moron. All right. Beer Mug, I think you're next.
Straight out of Compton.
Number one, ladies and gentlemen. Straight out of Compton.
Yeah. That's just bad order for me.
$161 million. That is the top all-time music biopic. All right. So we got number one, number two, and number three. Jensen, it's to you.
We're in a tough spot here, but I'm going to have to say, what's Love Got to Do with It?
Number 10.
Interesting.
Wow. Well done. That was the Tina Turner story, of course, played by Angela Bassett, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm.
$39 million. Number 10, all-time music bio box office. Kevin, you're up.
Tenacious D and the Pick of Destiny.
I'm sorry, no. Cult movie not on this list, at least in the
top
20.
Ridiculous list.
We weren't talking about which ones you liked the most, which ones made the most money. All right, Muggs.
The Doors with Val Kilmer.
Wow.
That's a great guess. Number 14, though. I'm sorry. Number 14. Great movie. I watched that within the last month. Directed by Oliver Stone. Great movie. All right, Jensen, you're up.
Finding myself at a real crossroads here. Let's say Woodstock.
Woodstock is a documentary. No documentary.
Well, the Dimitri Martin. It's not on there, though.
The Ang Lee film?
Yeah. Okay.
No. That was a fictional story, anyway. All right, Kevin, you're up.
You're being pretty picky, Bean.
It's not me being picky. I'm giving you parameters so that you can guess right.
Kevin and Bean's rock star.
Come on! Oh, wow, that seemed...
I'm sorry, it didn't make it. Muggsy.
This was a terrible movie, but I think it made a lot of money. All Eyes on Me.
Ladies and gentlemen, number nine.
Wow, he's killing.
What? Number nine. You're good at this. That was the Tupac movie.
Yeah. I saw that movie in theaters.
Wow. $44 million.
Not
well
a good
done.
Movie.
All right, Jensen. Although that kid looks so much like Tupac, doesn't he?
Yeah, he really did.
All right, Jensen, I believe you're up.
I'm running out of guesses here, guys. I don't know. Chip is also writing ones down, and I'm making me more nervous. I wish there was a Papa Roach movie, just so I could answer with it. I'm passing.
All right. If Jensen is out, shall I just go ahead and unveil it?
I have one more guess.
All right. One more guess for Muggs.
Okay. Because this will put me in the lead, and I think I'll win.
And then I have one.
La Bamba.
La Bamba is number six.
Yes! Although technically, I think he said Lumbamba.
He said Lumbarba, which is a movie about the seats in your car.
He said La Bamba.
That is the story of the great Los Angeles Hispanic artist Richie Valens, number six. Well done, Muggs.
Right, he killed.
One last guess. Airheads. Okay.
No.
Come on! Ridiculous!
Some of the ones outside the top ten, in case you're wondering, Great Balls of Fire, the Jerry Lee Lewis movie, the Buddy Holly story, Get On Up, the one that was James Brown movie from a couple of years ago, the Selena movie, Notorious, the B.I.G. movie, was at number 11. Here's your top 10. What's Love Got to Do with It? All Eyes on Me. Number 8, Jersey Boys, the story of the Four Seasons. Number 7, I believe it won the Academy Award for Best Picture, Amadeus.
Yeah.
Wow, I wouldn't have got that in a million guesses.
Amadeus.
No. All right.
Then La Bamba was number 6. Coal Miner's Daughter, the Loretta Lynn movie, at number 5. Ray at number 4.
Sure.
Jamie Foxx won his Academy Award for playing Ray Charles. And then Walk the Line, Bohemian Rhapsody, and Straight Outta Compton. Congratulations to Muggs. You are our winner. This has been Bean Makes Us Guess.